You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at WeAreLibertarians.com.
Oh, the Johnny Rocket Launchpad is liberty. Each week, we strive to bring you the best guests in talk radio. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad delivers weekly interviews of noteworthy politicians, experts, and activists. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad is bringing the party to the Libertarian Party and launching ideas in your direction. Check us out at JohnnyRocketLaunchpad.com. You can hear me, Kurt Nelson, and the beautiful Heather Nixon talk about the ideas of liberty. Rock and roll.
Hey there, Liberty lovers. This is Mark Clare of the Lions of Liberty podcast, where we strive to bring you great conversations about the ideas of liberty 3 days a week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Check us out at lionsofliberty.com.
Hey guys, this is Roger Paxton, and if you're fed up with the government running every single aspect of your life, but you're not listening to the Lava Flow podcast yet, then what's wrong with you? Check us out at thelavaflow.com, or just go back to sucking up to the government. The Lava Flow Podcast, striking the root every single episode.
We are supported by listeners like you. Donate per month or make a one-time donation through PayPal or Patreon at WeAreLibertarians.com.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I am your host, Chris Spangle. We Are Libertarians brings you all of the irreverence modern politics deserves, as well as all the fake news that you can stomach. We explain to you what the hell is happening in our world today and how we can fix it by thinking differently. This is a podcast brought to you by the We Are Libertarians Network. You can go into iTunes or Google Play and search We Are Libertarians and find all of our podcasts. And be sure to rate us and review us in iTunes, like us on Facebook, and please share this episode with friends and make sure it's the Christmas season. So we know you're about to get Christmas from Grandma. And what better way than to support your favorite news outlet, your favorite podcast, than donating at PayPal or Patreon? We are supported by listeners like you, and we are taking your questions and comments at editor@wearelibertarians.com. And once we slow down into the new year, we have like 10 questions that we're going to answer, Greg. We have a backlog of like a year of people sending questions. So we are getting to that, I promise. This is the Christmas spectacular with the Christmas party. The only people I could get to show up to my Christmas party are Greg, because Greg's always here.
This is a great party. We have Tad Western.
And Tad Western.
Tad Western here. I thought it was an actual party, and I thought it started an hour ago. So Rule 5 may get broken tonight.
He literally walked in, and he goes, am I the only one that's going to be here?
I brought a case of booze. I was like, we're down to party. This is going to be a libertarian party. Woo! I didn't know we were podcasting. He's sitting there like checking the mics. And
no, Mittens and Muffins are here.
They're people too.
Cornelius is not.
Well, they get photographed like their Instagram models.
I do want to bring up the blatant hypocrisy of Dear Leader. I spent an entire year making the argument that sometimes assimilation isn't good, and there are certain differences that just can't be overcome in a society or culture. It ends up creating backlash and hatred among people of different backgrounds. He mocks and belittles Rob Kendall. Poor Rob Kendall, the wall's greatest advocate.
Well, that's because Rob's full of crap and a liar, but
well, then,
he's got a bigger board.
But so then it comes to Chris decides to graciously allow back Muffins into his home.
Well, Muffins, if you're a long, long time listener, if you go back to the 2013 days when I was married in the previous administration, I had two cats. I had Mittens and I had Muffins. And if you go back and listen to the February, I think it's 28th episode of 2014, it's Greg, Gina, and I talking about something, and I'm really chatty throughout the episode, and about halfway through, I get very quiet. That's because that's when my wife was packing up all of her things and leaving. And one of the things that she took was Muffins. So when I moved here, Mittens was very upset. She was looking for her sister constantly. And that was the most heartbreaking part of the divorce, was that Mittens was so sad. And so after a couple months, I decided to adopt a kitty. Actually, our friend Lauren Lowry, her brother, had a cat on Facebook and said, "Hey, this is a sweet cat. Come get it." I was like, "All right." So Cornelius came and lived with Mittens and I for 3 years.
So 3 years.
3 years. And
of getting adjusted to a home.
Correct.
Of somewhere that, you know, she had taken to living here. You know, it wasn't as loving between mittens and corn muffins as before. But she'd become acclimated, if you will.
She
assimilated.
Shed many a coats here.
No, there wasn't any acclimation. She was living under Sharia law, and Mittens was living under her tyrannical rule. It was very much an Assad versus ISIS thing.
So either way, introducing new actors into a foreign environment leads to hostile conditions, if you will.
Exactly. So for about
now for people, libertarians. Absolutely stressed.
People are always rational.
You just have to accept. You have to accept different cultures and live amongst each other in peace because it's the right thing to do. There's no such thing as borders. The nation state is a false construct of society rather than the foundations of freedom. And then the opportunity to get muffins back into your life comes along.
Right. And well, the ex-wife, once again, looking to unload some problems. That's not fair. I actually...
you wanted muffins.
I did, because she's one of the sweetest cats you'll ever see. And you know, out here is Mittens territory, and in there is Muffins territory, and there just wasn't a third state for Cornelius here.
But you're saying that poor little corn muffins who had...
Borders work is what he said.
He is. He's making the case that only cats should only have borders. People shouldn't be allowed to have borders.
Well, let's be honest. Cats are much more complicated and difficult than geopolitics and ISIS. So
then you have corn muffins.
Uh-huh.
What do you do with corn muffins?
Well, our friend Christine...
That's called being deported.
Physically removed.
Via
an RC helicopter.
Yeah.
It was an immigration...
There was never an agreement by corn muffins, because in fact Christine showed a video.
You violated his nap.
Yeah, of corn muffins hiding behind the washing machine and not leaving. That didn't look like, you know.
She's currently hiding inside Christine's son's bed.
Yes, and all because of you and your libertarian, you know, up here among the clouds, your perfection of society. Down when it comes to brass tacks with cats. You are as cutthroat and ruthless as Trump.
Yeah, it's freedom for me. Iron fist, get the hell out of here.
Meow, meow. The real reason is Mittens...
Listen to his justification.
Mittens was very stressed out and had...
As foreigners with different backgrounds tend to do when introduced into environments that are completely normal.
And had taken to essing outside of the litter box. As foreigners are wont to do in Detroit.
Yep, I'm just saying.
And, anywhere.
Yeah.
Whole lot of parallels. I think you're finally grasping the importance.
Christine, her cat passed away. Her cat died.
Sorry for your loss, Christine.
And so Christine was looking for a cat for her kids, who are heartbroken over the loss of their cat. And once again, Chris Spangle comes to the rescue.
It's a White Knight move, isn't it?
100%. Yeah. Have you seen Christine?
Yes, I have.
And so... Never mind. I was thinking of something that I can't say.
Yeah.
But
I'm just saying
that
you're using a lot of rationalization to avoid your hypocrisy.
You're being awful to these poor kids who lost their cat and needed.
You're missing the point. Cornelius is who gets to decide where they want to voluntarily.
Cornelius,
violated his catnap.
She is not a person.
What kind of name?
Cats don't have rights.
Yeah. How do you know? Why are you assuming?
How do
it's
you know
gender.
That? You just said they're more complicated than people.
I'm assuming her gender because she would always, like, plop down in front of me and lick her right in front of me.
Well, how do you know that wasn't a penis?
Yes.
He just assumed her genital form.
You were gone for 2 years. You have no idea. Maybe you... That stress...
I just want it to be known that when push comes to shove... Libertarians cannot wait to physically remove different cultures out of their living environment.
Call me a central planner, but this was what was best for all parties involved.
I agree. See, I think you did the right thing. As someone who believes in physical removal and walls, this is totally in accordance with every one of my philosophical beliefs.
It was about this week, Greg... When MTV released a video saying that white men are the problem and giving us all us white men resolutions for 2017, and that's when I fired up my own helicopter.
Did you?
I was ready.
Now, it was by white Was it a female? Yeah, it was like a young girl. What was that?
It was...
I know it was a Jew. It was Goldstein.
Well, that was...
No, I know...
Was it?
Yeah. No. Her name is like Zaza.
That's Zsa Gabor passed away.
Okay, no, this was my weeks run together.
This was MTV. You know, the moral bastion that brought us 16 and Pregnant.
That girl.
Released a video of several multi-ethnic millennials, with the exception of a white male. There was a white woman and a black male and an Asian girl. And they released a video with resolutions for white men for 2017 telling us to stop being racist.
What if we were never racist?
Well, no, they're racist. You're racist because they just white men. It's just you're all automatically racist.
It's default,
right?
Oh, okay.
We don't have to commit an act.
I don't have to do anything.
No, it's our original sin.
And white is a pejorative term now. So,
so I'm a minority now?
You are. You are.
Awesome. So well, I'm gonna start drawing all kinds of crazy help from the government.
Draw all kinds of crazy. Cross figures all over.
Yeah.
Windmills.
Windmills. The windmill of friendship and tolerance.
Somebody's burning plus signs.
So now I'm just glad. I wanted that point. I wanted this vindication for Rob Kendall on his show. But I feel like in his absence, it needs to be pointed out that you have seen the light. You have seen how important it is to have comfortable living environments with people you accept. As long as you get to accept them and you can keep out the ones you want and physically remove the ones you want.
Extra leg room, so to speak.
I witnessed
if we were in German, we called Leibensfrau.
Exactly. I witnessed the effect that the third cat had on Spengel. It created a hostile living environment.
He was even stressed out.
Talk about that last episode.
It was. He was so stressed out, he was getting up, and a listener had recommended cat pheromones to try and...
Plugged in right down there.
Yeah, trying to, you know...
Is that why it smells like
what?
Yeah, tidy cat in here.
Does it? Oh god.
Yeah. I was expecting it to smell like a fresh winter fire cuz Spangle has this gigantic
I'm burning a lot of wood right now.
Yeah. He's got a wood furnace.
I think it's
candle. Wood fireplace.
Oh yeah. That's what it is.
But it smells like dry cleaning.
Yes, it's the lemon candle, but no, cuz if you tell me my place smells like cat, the whole place is being bleached. as soon as you leave.
The rest of vacation.
I know what he's doing tomorrow.
I'm very paranoid about that. No, like right here is where she was dropping
she had a spot, bombs though.
She had a spot.
See, a lot of people online think that it had been their actions that had been triggering you.
Right.
And it wasn't. The cause was the hostile living environment.
It was.
By introducing I guess you could say a refugee. If you
well, I'm very annoyed with everyone online, but
but it was stemming from you couldn't relax ever,
ever.
Even in your home.
And you know how I am about
you never know when you're going to step on a little cat tootsie.
My physical space is very important to me, and we've gone through some. I have a chair. I don't know if you saw new chair.
I like the chair. I like the redesign. It looks really good.
It's a very Archie Bunker-like chair. I've got my little.
It's your reading corner. Nook.
I like
but Jason Doolittle, listener Jason Doolittle, he is he works with animals and he has been very helpful in just giving me some friendly non-certified advice. he recommended Feelaway, and if you have cats, multiple cats, and they're
is that
stressed,
really its name?
Feelaway is not
spelled feline, like
F-E-L-I-way.
Okay.
Not Tyler's Saturday Night, which is Feel Away.
Yeah. I'm too drunk, sorry.
But these cat pheromones, they give off the pheromones of the mother cat when they're baby kittens, and it soothes them, it calms them down. And so it worked for the first month, but then I ran out, and then World War III started, and the three of them would get in the entryway over here, and hell would break loose. And so I could tell by her body language during the last podcast that Mittens was trying to unload. And so I started to get very anxious about that. And so I started locking them all away. And
but then you felt bad about locking them all together.
I felt bad because then I was like, she's going to crap on my bed. listeners, take note. I'm trying to curse less.
That's a good resolution.
Yes. And
curse a lot.
Fuck you, Ted. And so yeah, I was just all – and it just was constant. And I was like constantly – I have a carpet cleaner.
How do they get the pheromones? Do they grind up
their
kitties?
They're synthetic. They milk kit.
Oh, that's why they don't work.
They milk them. No, it works.
You can milk anything with nipples, fucker.
I have cat pheromone spray somewhere around here. If you wanna leave feeling attracting.
I'll leave some pheromones around here. You better believe it.
So yeah, the situation has been resolved. Cornelius is starting to warm up to her new family.
Warm up.
She's a very tense cat. She's very stressed out. And the reason she got chosen to leave the
Spangle's
island...
Spangle's choice.
It, like Sophie's choice. She had to leave because she has anxiety. She's very stressed out.
She's a diva. Let's get to the point.
She's a drama queen.
She needs all the attention.
She's worse than Jeff and Caitlin.
Is that how you rationalize deporting one of your own children?
Greg, this was very tough on me. It was very emotional, and I don't appreciate you taking something so traumatic in my life and turning it into a little joke for your podcast.
It isn't a joke. I'm just making I'm doing the comparison that it isn't okay to deport people, but poor cats who can't provide for themselves.
You're lucky we're harping on a cat that doesn't live here anymore. You're drinking out of a freaking...
It's a 48.
It's a 5 gallon. It's a water jug that you drink out of in the office.
It's a 48 ounce yes. Nalgene bottle.
No, it's bigger than that.
No, it's 48 ounces. It's right here, state law.
It's privilege.
And so, you know, the Nalgene bottles,
1400 milliliters,
with a wide rim. I have a fleet of them. I have about 8. I drink about a gallon of water.
But wait
a
minute. You have the adapter. That's not a wide rim. It goes down to a nipple, and he's just been sucking on it. Every time anybody else is talking.
So I found this. So they come in 32 ounce, which is my preferred size, but I found the 48 ounce.
And that just tickles your fancy, doesn't it?
And look how much more ounces of water. You get
sometimes
12 more ounces.
Sometimes you just want bigger.
I just was like, this is obnoxiously big. And so
sometimes
it's so
you're
funny.
Like, there's no way that's going to fit. And then you're just like, oh my.
So it's, we'll put a
my man purse is that deep.
We'll have to put a photo of it up on the Instagram.
Yeah.
You got to hold it next to your face, though. Hold it next to your face.
So here, I'll drink some water. Greg will take the photo. We'll put it up on Instagram, which is at We Are Libertarians.
Hold it to the side of your face.
No, I'm not giving you the opportunity.
Come on. Give me the bush four.
There we go. Perfection. So,
no, he is trying to get me to basically give him a Photoshop template for
a
dick.
I'm not taking any photos. I'm not doing nothing.
Uh-huh. Well,
I'm just sitting here acting like a good guest who was here for a party and no one else showed up.
Poor Tad. He went, where'd you go, to the Stack Pickle? The Stack Pickle, the official waiting...
Well, the pre-game to the Spangle podcast. I don't know if anyone knows this, but...
The official green room of the We Are Libertarians podcast is the Stack Pickle down the street.
The Stack Pickle is so nice. They give the Spangle podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who's going to be on it, like, a certain percentage off their bill.
Do they? They don't do that for me.
Gary Brackett is a nice man. He runs a class, grade A...
Organization.
Anywho, I was over there eating dinner.
Yeah.
And I thought the podcast started at
six.
Well, and I'm running on, I guess, Central Time.
Run a little ahead of schedule.
Right.
Yeah, so well, I sat there for a while.
I feel like we've thoroughly lashed you for your hypocrisy on physical removal, deportation, and nation state walls.
Hold on just a second.
Yeah. What else do we have to talk about? Oh, shit. Oh, he's cursing again.
You see this dip right here? That's actually a cat.
That was Christine.
She's so fat. That's hilarious.
The cat, not Christine.
No, Christine's very svelte.
All I saw was black and just looked like a you.
It's Christine. Let's open presents.
All right, you can open yours first. Tad, I had gotten Tad a six-pack of Bell's Two Hearted, right. And he has
Chris. Six? There's only two here. Who drank the other four?
Aaron.
All right, so.
Haran.
And let's... so this is, I need to get a picture of you opening yours, dear leader.
Right. Can't wait.
So we'll put that up on Instagram.
Straight flexing.
Okay, it's a lovely bag.
Do you
That's
like
a
the
beautiful
bag?
Wrap. Look at the wrap, too. Don't throw that away. You can re-gift
I'm
that
totally
last
totally reusing
next
this.
Year.
I like it.
Well, for Valentine's Day.
He really went all out. Oh, my God.
I'm loving it.
It is Trump's The Art of the Deal.
The hardcover edition.
The hardcover.
First edition hardback.
First edition hardback.
Shit.
Tad is so hard right now.
Is it autographed on the inside?
It isn't. I looked on a like book, one of those like Abe's books or whatever, and it was over $1,000 for a first edition sign.
Oh my gosh.
Hold it back up, damn it.
All right, here.
Nice. I love it. Had to get a pic of that. I'm sorry for yelling.
To my parents, Fred and Mary.
It's a great
novel. Is this legit a first edition?
They advertised it as.
Are you kidding me? Uh-uh. It's $28. It's in pristine edition, too.
Yes.
Wow. Building on the boardwalk, Trump Tower, the Tiffany location. The Grand Hotel, the Cincinnati Kid. I can't wait. This is
Cincinnati
thank you
Kid's
so much.
A good story.
Do you feel great again?
I feel so great. I'm telling you, I really think that this is a first edition. I'm looking at all the credits.
Yeah, that was the thing is that that was how the seller promoted it, was that it was a first edition.
That's nice.
This work originally published in 1987,
yeah.
And there is no reprint. So thank you very much. That's very kind of you.
I hope you enjoy it. It is. I figured it was the perfect closing to 2016.
You know what? That's great because he got me the water bottle that Trump touched but did not drink.
I did. Yeah.
And I still have it. He joked. I said, I want that freaking water bottle.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's been touched by the
government. Not only that. Did you know Trump's Lamborghini Diablo was for sale? And it went for like $80,000 or something. Something ridiculous.
Wow.
It's actually got Donald J. Trump and everything in it. Do you know how much that car is worth right now? I'm kicking
myself.
It's
$1 million.
I need to just like take out a loan and just buy that
thing. Work
the
rest of your life to sell it off.
It's like a 96 Diablo or 97, something like that.
Well, yeah,
it's blue. Oh,
we got a bottle of Trump water with gaffer's tape and what I believe to be Donald Trump's hair in the gaffer's tape up on the We Are Libertarians Wall of Fame. We'll get a photo of that too and put that up there.
He's literally the president.
Tad,
is your mind not blown?
No, literally every single day I go,
I wake up
believe
every morning.
He's president.
I literally wake up. The only reason I get out of bed is to check my Twitter. Like, what was he shit posting after I went to sleep? And I don't go to sleep. I'm an insomniac.
Now
he's asleep till like 2 o'clock.
Now he's talking about more nuclear weapons. I can't believe he's president, and I can't believe he's president.
No,
really
not
are two
only
different
is
things.
Is he president? He's our president.
All right, Tad, go ahead and open your present.
Which one?
Yours
is it
the
one,
one
that looks like a sausage?
No, that's Greg's. That's Greg's.
There you go, Greg. You have a sausage.
So, here.
This is the greatest rap job.
Mittens.
Make rapping great again.
Mittens helped open it. So, Tad is unwrapping his present. He's sniffing it.
I don't smell these cat pheromones.
No, no cat pheromones on it.
Oh, my.
Oh, there's half the wrap. It's gone.
Oh, my
goodness.
It is Tad's.
It's a Make America Great Again
it's
hat.
It's the gold formal.
And then
it's the hat so nice that you can't wear it unless you're wearing a tie.
Right.
The description. And my koozie.
So
the Lion Jer stole.
Yes.
Months ago.
So both of these items are already Tad's.
I just
keep forgetting to give them
to him. But you know what?
But now he has them.
So I wrapped them and gave them to him as a present.
But Christmas is for gifts, and this is a gift.
Yeah. What he didn't have before, he has now.
He at the thing at the Halloween.
Someone get a picture.
Jeff Vibbert podcast. He left at the summer swim party. He left his koozie in July.
Do it again.
And then his Make America Great hat. He left at the Halloween podcast. And so I've been holding on to those for months.
If that right there is not a life size Trump dildo that you got, Greg.
All right, so Greg,
right.
Go ahead and open yours.
I will open mine.
Damn it! Thank you, Spangle. How did you commandeer this?
Oh, that
koozie.
I stole it from Jeremiah. I went in there
a thief. That's against the nap.
All right, so go ahead.
All right.
All right, so Greg is opening his present.
This is like so. I'm the world's worst rapper, and you did a good job on something like this. I could not do it.
No, Fetty Wap is the world's worst rapper.
Oh my god!
It's toothpaste. Go ahead and read it.
InfoWars Life Super Blue Non-Fluoride.
No, keep the fluoride out of the water.
Into the mic.
With iodine nano silver, peppermint, and tea tree oil, recommended by none other, Mr. Woke himself, Alex Jones.
All right, give me a pose. We'll put this. So I got you some fluoride-free toothpaste.
You went above and beyond. This,
are you
this
shitting
is something
me?
I will treasure.
I've also got you.
Oh, my God.
It comes free with every purchase. They send a bumper sticker.
Oh, my God.
So there is your InfoWars bumper sticker.
I'm completely woke. I got complete. Thank you very much.
I got a tube for myself.
Did you?
And buy one, get one free?
No, they're $15 a piece.
Jeez, that's a lot of non-fluoride.
But let me look at how good my teeth look.
I tell you what.
I used it for the first time before you guys got here, and my teeth are
so... How do they
so
feel, though?
Very
clean. You feel... No, it's not what your teeth feel. It's your brain.
Yeah. Well, it's very pepperminty.
Do you know it puts tinfoil into your brain cells? From the inside.
So
you don't have to wear your hat around.
It's really something. Going back to 2013, there is an infamous fight on this podcast where Chris Skull.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, whoa.
Excuse you, Mr. Well, Farch.
Sorry.
Check your privilege.
Had some heat. Yeah.
Burp that white male somewhere else.
So the belch smelled great because of the toothpaste.
I don't smell anything other than this cat pheromone.
Blow the candle out.
I don't know.
You're freaking me out.
I'm kidding. I'm joking.
You're really getting
to me. He
doesn't
realize Tad Western's a satirist. I'm a Saturnist retrograde.
It's well documented. My
I'm a Saturnist.
My long history of satirism.
Oh, shit. No, I do that.
Right? It literally is. I mean, that's another word for full of crap. Talking about your love life or what?
This is the greatest Christmas present I've ever received.
This is
an all-time gag gift.
I asked Siri, have you ever seen a dick that big? She said, no match found.
So Chris Galt is a huge Alex Jones fan, and he's very conspiratorial. And
wait a minute.
He used to come on. Hold on. Let me talk. And he's very chatty tonight,
five.
Tad Western.
Rule 5.
And yeah, rule number 5.
Myself.
Don't get too drunk.
I'm not drunk.
And
just chatty.
You're worse than Aaron right now.
Oh,
you
got a gun.
I got a gun. So Chris Galt was one of the original co-hosts. He and Creighton Harrington and I started this podcast nearly, I can't believe it, 5 years ago.
Is that not shocking?
It's amazing to me that this is almost 5 years old. And it started out as just a fun hobby, and now it's turned into a responsibility, and I don't know how I feel about that. No, I love it. I'm kidding. But anyway, so Galt always listened to Alex Jones, and Creighton and I always would tell him, like, you're an idiot. Stop it. But he never would get too conspiratorial.
Pushy.
He would never push it because he knew how we feel about conspiracy stuff. And when you came on, he wouldn't push it too much.
Well, it's just you don't want that attachment. You know what I mean? Like, there's not a whole lot wrong with it. It's just, like, I don't want to go there.
No, and I will tell you that because I've been reading, like, all the campaign books that Trump put out, I've been reading, which we'll read a little bit of, Michael Flynn's Field of Flight. I've been reading, all the Blue Collar Conservative by Rick Santorum, Newt Gingrich's books, just trying to get a handle on what we can expect over the next 4 years. And so I've been listening to Alex Jones, too, because he's establishment media now. He's directly connected to the president of the United States. And so if you want to know what Donald Trump is thinking, you might hear it on Alex Jones now.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to hear 60% crap, 20% loosely, like it could, you know, just enough facts that you could allege it. And then the rest 20% is solid, factual reporting.
Here's how I would break it down. 50% self-promotion and discussion about him.
He's got kids to feed.
Or hyperbole. 25% of it is just, this week I heard him say something. He had a guest on who was talking about how the Illuminati chose the name Hollywood for Hollywood because druids made their magic wands out of Hollywood.
Druids, not druids.
Druids. druids, and they invented TV for mind control, and then the Academy, or the Emmys, if you take the acronym of whatever the official board of the Emmys is, it's Satan spelled backwards. Ooh. So it all works out. Blue Ivy, supposedly, like, if you,
that's real.
If you spell her name, the daughter of Jay-Z and Beyonce, if you spell her name backwards, it's like the Latin name for the devil's daughter or something. There's just all these crazy kids. So there's like 25% of that stuff, and then there's 25% of like him talking to Roger Stone and like real honest to goodness like clips where it's like, oh, that's really. I heard about something we'll talk about tonight. Was the China's social credit system. Basically, it's a credit score based on your social media.
Absolutely. Yeah, like clout was originally designed for in the United States.
Yeah, that article came out a while ago.
And so in the Economist wrote about it and reported on it, and we'll read some bits and pieces of that. But yeah, so there's 25% of it is decent information. And it's so funny that he and Glenn Beck hate each other because they have so much in common.
Well, Glenn Beck is a Mormon.
And so much of their information is so similar. So
oh, yeah.
It is. They like to hark on... Harp. Sensationality of everything.
Right.
I love Alex Jones. Don't get me wrong. I've been a fan of him since he went on the Justin Bieber rant, and even before that when he snuck into Bohemian Grove.
Oh yeah,
like he's the only
that
man
was
to sneak
legitimate
in.
Reporting.
He's the only man to sneak in and get out.
There is
the great governor Ventura. He loves him as well.
Yep. The documentary of him sneaking into Bohemian Grove was fascinating to watch. And like you read it, and it's performance art, but the way he frames it is it's devil worship.
There's shit going on.
And so it's, there's two ways to take everything, and he always kind of takes it to the extreme.
Well,
you know?
That sells newspapers. Let's,
exactly
and
right.
And toothpaste, goddammit. You paid $15 for that.
The dude has 60 employees. He's got
it's a small media empire.
Tens of millions of listeners.
Tens of millions.
He's in the top 10 of like websites in the U.S. I mean, he does have a... And apparently he's...
Matt Drudge links to him.
Apparently he's under the biggest DDoS attack in history right now, and that shut down his shopping cart, and he said that cost him over 4 days $100,000.
At least, yeah.
Which, to... I'm sitting here going, I got to start like talking about conspiracy theories. This dude
They're
has...
conspiracy is a bad word.
Exactly. It's a derogatory word.
It's just like... Right. I don't know.
If you go and you look at Infowars.com, it's just like any other website. Like, if I go and look at it, I'm going to go to Raw Story or Think Progress or Vox, and 50% of it I'm going to throw out. 25% of it is something that I would use, and 25% of it is just hyperbole.
Alex Jones gets a ton of shit, but he actually reports pretty much anything he hears, whether it's true or not. But
right.
But he will report shit that's true that CNN or any of the mainstream media won't report.
So it is an interesting listen. And what we always used to do to Galt was say, you're a conspiracy theory, shut up. We're not going to be labeled with that. Instead of like having the critical thinking skills of engaging him and talking with him
down
about
to
it.
Is self-censorship and, oh, well... I can smell bullshit from a mile away on this. Or, well, you know what? That sounds kind of crazy, but I may want to look into it. Because Alex does have the documents, and he will tweet them out.
He has the documents.
He has all of them.
And so Galt and
put them on bumper stickers.
And so Galt and Creighton got into a big fight over fluoride. We didn't realize, like, at 4 years ago, somebody saying to us, they put, and it still sounds just as crazy now, but somebody, they put they, it's always they, they're the biggest liars, and
well,
like, you listen to Alex Jones, and you always hear, they, and like, who are they, so anyways.
They's a cop-out.
Right, so they put fluoride in the water for mind control and to dumb us down and to make the frogs gay, and so he wanted to talk about that on an episode, and I told him, no, we're just not gonna talk about that, because... That's not the purview of what we do, and there's people out there better suited to do it than we are, and I don't believe that fluoride was invented for mind control.
My problem's always the intent.
Right.
Like, so, like, yes, fluoride was put in the water. Yes, after the fact, Fox News and Huffington Post released articles that said that in mass quantities, it can make an individual more pliable, mentally pliable.
Right.
I don't think that was ever intentional. Like, that's the difference. Like, I think they did it with the best of intent. because they thought that was a
helped the teeth.
Yeah, it helped people's teeth and prevented tooth decay. That was the best science at the time. So like, that's a lot of the problem with the conspiracy theorist is they will make a leap on intent that I'm not willing to unless I can find proof of that.
Well, it is a brilliant thing with Alex Jones where it is you're fighting against the globalists and you find yourself rallying to his cause because he's defined an enemy. He's arguing that the enemy is evil.
Absolutely.
He's molding information around those enemies. And the enemy, quote-unquote, happens to be, like, to him, they're enemies. To me, they're competition. Like, the left and big government and globalists, like, those are people that we're in competition with as libertarians. He takes it to a sinister level.
Yeah.
And that's where I get lost.
Everyone loves being on a team.
Exactly right.
And, like, we just live in a world where you can't hide conspiracies anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they were able to, you know, the CIA has been able to cover up a lot of intervention with foreign governments and then picking who they wanted to win because they didn't like the existing regime or the interests were, you know, in opposition. And now look at it where it took less than 3 years for a movie to get made about Benghazi.
Right.
It took, what, with Fargo, the protection on state secrets took 20 years to come off because it was what from 60s or no it was 79 to 96 before Gustav Rikados or not an Argo or no Charlie Wilson's War and then right. Argo, you know, it took a while before those were allowed to be researched under Freedom of Information Act.
The truth of that actually came out before. I believe the documents were linked, but it was all mainstream.
But like those were provable things, and like they made movies about them. Now in Benghazi, none of those documents are out.
No,
but because of the way the world exists, where there's everyone has a cell phone.
Am I?
I mean,
I still believe that there's a lot going on in the shadows.
Oh, I thought you said I'm bleeding.
Oh, I do too.
Oh, absolutely.
I just mean like now people go ahead and make movies about the shadows, where in the past they waited for the CIA but to I think release that's the documents.
So
I'm kind of on the edge about the whole conspiracies and all that shit.
Right.
When I think it's more of a deterrent.
No, I think that a lot of it is out in the open, and this is where Alex Jones says, listen, I'm not reporting on things that you can't find. They put it in white papers, and they publish it in universities, and it's all out there.
Absolutely.
You know, his view of Planned Parenthood is that it is part of the eugenics Part of the he keeps talking over me. I'm going to have to throw him out. Happy Christmas. Margaret Sanger was part of the eugenics movement. She was part of population control. She did want to kill 50 million black babies. She did, you know, this because she had racist tendencies. And so he's not saying anything that people aren't saying. He's telling his version of the truth. And he's making leaps in logic that sometimes I find to be just, it's just too far. And it's the same with Glenn Beck, and it's the same with any liberal program that I listen to. You know, but I have always done a disservice to our listeners, to myself, to those people who do consume that information by just blanketly calling them conspiracy theorists and washing my hands of it. And that's what we did to Galt, and that's why Galt and Creighton got into a fist fight one day over conspiracy theories. I think it was in, like, episode, it was in the 20s, I think, and it's labeled The Fight. And so they fight about this, and then afterwards they came to blows. And Galt really, after that, in chat, went off about fluoride, and they got into a big argument. So fluoride has always been a big inside
and
joke.
9/11 too.
9/11
is what really got Galt going, and I was at the point where, like, I had heard. I still to this day, like, I just haven't even watched the documentaries. Like, I just don't.
Same here.
It's just like I don't care. Whatever, you know. I just can't believe they could keep that. Like, I don't know how you could have kept it secret.
I've read enough to understand the basic arguments of 9/11 truthers, and I've read enough refutations from people like Popular Mechanics, and I've looked at the refutations of the refutations, and I look at it and I just go, my eyes are to be believed, you know, like and that's sort of like when you look at Hillary Clinton and you look at the WikiLeaks, a lot of there's just I think what people don't quite understand that, you know, because I work in the media, you can see people in their raw form, and then you see their projections. So, like, I've met Jim Gaffigan, I've met Gabriel Iglesias, I've met Carlos Mencia, I've met Jeff Foxworthy, I've met Larry the Cable Guy. Like, I've met all these major figures in comedy. and entertainment, and like the Big Show from WWE. I'm not name dropping. I'm just saying, like, I'm getting to a point here. When you meet these people, you look at it and you go, I bet Jeff Foxworthy and Larry the Cable Guy are really nice people. I bet Jim Gaffigan is a really good guy. They are. And everything that everybody that around me says about those people confirms that their public persona is exactly who they are. And there are – when I worked in the racing industry in the PR department, racing, you know, high adrenaline, high testosterone guys, and there are guys who have a public perception of being a dick. And they are.
Oh, Tony Stewart for sure.
Danica Patrick is one of the – most awful people you could she may be different now, but back when I worked with her 10 years ago, one of the nastiest people I've ever been around.
She was ragging, bro.
And you could just tell that was that's what she projected. So what we as a society kind of feel about a situation or a person are usually confirmed by things like WikiLeaks. The Clinton cash stuff, the Clinton Foundation, it's all slippery. There's something wrong with it, but we can't prove it. There's no smoking gun. WikiLeaks gives us smoking guns.
Yeah.
And so
if the deletion of and the home server is not enough.
Right. You know, and so you have all these very, and that's why like Pizzagate just gets, it takes it, you know, I'm not going to say conspiracy theory, but the part of Pizzagate where we're talking about John Podesta trafficking kids and stealing kids and you know, Lolita Express and all this stuff.
Pizzagate's a lot of dots being connected without any other dots in between.
Exactly right. It's fun to indulge as a conspiracy theory, but it's nothing that you can prove. And ultimately, that does a disservice to the actual provable information that is relevant to her not being president of the United States.
Yeah, like the actual pizza, like the pizza place should have been separated from what was actually going on because, you know, Hillary Clinton had a shocking level of interest in a lady named Laura Silsby in Haiti who was there before the earthquake.
Which actually had ties to child trafficking. Yeah,
so they used an attorney at her request or her recommendation that had been a convicted sex trafficker in right. El Salvador. And so Laura Silsby is down there. The Haitian government is holding her for trying to get children out. And they set up there where she would be taking them is to the island of Ankara, which they will issue a birth certificate to anyone that comes through there. And so that's where a lot of this type of stuff happens because it doesn't matter. They will blanket issue for money a birth certificate.
Pretty much.
And so the Clinton Global Initiative had an office there, which would make sense because that's where you would to stop it.
Sure.
But so it was odd that she would have an interest in this lady named Laura Silsby, who then the Haitian government imprisoned. They used a convicted sex trafficking attorney to get her out. And then she came back to the United States. I believe either got married or changed her last name and now is a vice president at the company that makes Amber Alerts. And so there are just a lot of odd connections about that.
But that has nothing to do with pizza in Washington, D.C. Right, so
it went off the rails when it went to like, you know, people
there
started showing
so
up at
pizza
place.
There was so much info, they just kind of combined it all together.
Well, then you look at it now and you say the connection to the pizza place was James Olifantis. Mm-hmm. James Olifantis.
The owner.
He was also the homosexual lover of Brock. Who owns Media Matters, who's waging the war on fake news.
Right.
And so there are these weird. So now
and
this guy
funny,
is waging
nobody
the war.
Knew anything about it. Then all of a sudden, the internet goes digging deep.
And then George Soros made a $55,000 donation via public record to a pizza place. And so these are all things that you can back up in paper trail.
To a pizza place. Okay.
And you say that's an odd donation for $55,000 to have to be a part of federal record to a for-profit pizza place.
Right.
And so you just start, those things just start to add up in your life. And then you go off the rails and people start.
It smells fishy.
Yeah. Well, you look at the Instagram and, you know, they have a thing called a kill room and you're like, that's odd. Mm-hmm. Why would you have a kill room in the basement of a pizza place?
Right.
And then say you don't have a basement. And then sure enough, you had testified at a city council hearing about your basement. You know, it's just, it's so much,
kids or not.
You know, and I'm someone that says I don't believe that they eat children. Right. I don't think that Beyonce performed for Hillary Clinton to save Blue Ivy from Moloch.
Right.
But I do think that there's something that's weird when a $55,000 donation from the largest donor on the left to a for-profit pizza place that already has some iffy connections right now.
Well, and then you have the story.
There's a lot of iffy connections that didn't have to do with pizza. It was just financial shit going back and forth.
Yeah.
They
the finances are messed up.
Which is what people should focus on, the shit that's actually provable, which is still dirty enough.
Yeah.
So going back, the notion of fake news and Russian intervention, you know, Putin is, I think it was Amarov. I was reading it a little bit earlier today in The Economist, as if I could sound douchier. But, you know, where he is part of, you know, the KGB system to... for disinformation.
Oh, absolutely. That was his training.
Well, that was his training. That was his specialty.
I don't know if he ever got promoted, but there's a picture of Ronald Reagan in Moscow, and Putin is a fake tourist meeting him with a camera shaking his hand.
It is the Andropov Academy, Vladimir Putin, and Active Measures. If you look up Active Measures, that's an active... Active Measures was the system that the KGB and the Russians have and do use to delegitimize governments, mm-hmm. similar to the way that our CIA operates. And one of them is, you know, coming into America and spreading lies that the CIA did Kennedy. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about that in the last episode. You know, and it's a way for what has happened is... as we discussed ad nauseum in the last episode, is that fake news becomes a blanket term like conspiracy theorist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's horrible. It's
where you just can say, like, there's no reason to listen to We Are Libertarians because what could these two possibly know? You know, what could the people that are on We Are Libertarians and the people behind it know about government? Well, I have over 10 years of experience in working in politics and libertarian politics, Republican politics, as somebody who worked at a news talk radio station for 4 years as a reporter, going and working with Republicans, Democrats, Independents, Tea Party activists, dominatrix, and...
You're paid by Moscow?
That are paid by Moscow, you know, and Greg is somebody who is clearly very well read, and it's not like he and I have stopped reading. It's not like he and I stop. Literally, we spend hours and hours and hours mining information for these 2 or 3 hours of information that we give you, and the output is on our social media and on our website. And, you know, because we have gone to school for this and we have worked in industries that allow us insight into the political process, we have a unique point of view that a lot of people don't. But Politico wouldn't declare us quote-unquote journalists, you know, but who's to say that we aren't?
You can't really, I mean, there's no way to create a licensing process for journalism, you know.
But what's happened.
What is journalism anyway when you got all these news anchors lying about getting shot down in helicopters and everything else? I mean, the term has no bearing anymore anyway.
Right, but our political speech, our ability to speak with authority is challenged by the label alt-right.
Absolutely.
Or the label fake news when it's anything but. You can engage with what we produce and make up your own mind. The licensing of journalists has happened in places like China. It has happened in places like Europe.
In Brazil, where they had massive government cover-up embezzling funds through their national oil company.
They're going to come in and try to make it seem like a good thing. Oh, we're going to get rid of all this fake news, and then all you're going to get is propaganda.
Well,
it's textbook. You can read it from a mile away.
Exactly. Like the Poynter Institute, the Nieman Journalism Lab, the Columbia Journalism Review. These are revered institutions, but they're also, like Poynter, is funded by Soros.
Yeah.
You have Snopes, which gets Soros funding. You have all these institutions that train journalists. And what you get is journalists that are trained in the modern journalism, which is basically reporting what the establishment says. We have a system of the way that modern establishment journalism works is that I'll never forget the day when I said something negative about a Democratic politician on the air at a news talk conservative radio show, and we went to break, and the host clips off and goes, "Hey, don't say that kind of stuff." "What do you mean?" "They're a liberal. We're going after them." We have to work with these people. This is not Rush Limbaugh. This is journalism. And so we have to speak nicely about these people and with respect so we can have access to them.
Mm-hmm.
That is the foundation.
Well, you got to remember, we have a for-profit news.
Right.
And so ultimately your advertisers and subscribers dictate entirely what kind of editorial content you mm-hmm. run. And so even Woodward and Bernstein, I'm sure, got unbelievable blowback against running the Nixman expose because at the end of the day, every advertiser for the Washington Post or I forget what magazine
everybody.
Or what newspaper it was, that flirts right with the line of conspiracy. And so doing that means your advertisers will want to pull out. And that is the almighty dollar is what dictates what kind of news coverage consumers receive. No, it still does.
Well, this is
from
what they're
the
trying
major
to get
media outlets.
Because people can type anything they want on the internet for free. They can have a blog and it can be completely 100% whatever they believe, but they just report the truth no matter what side it's on. But,
right.
But I mean, what happens then?
Well, I mean,
that's
so,
why they're trying to censor this.
Yeah, but I mean, like, the free market dictates in our society what actually gets coverage anyway. Like, so even if they adopted journalist licensing credentials and a framework for how or what actually qualifies as real news versus fake news.
But what's hilarious is you say that, but Pizzagate was fake news.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, it comes out of nowhere. You got this shooter who supposedly came out and was shooting in the air or whatever. Then you got Saturday Night Live running all this shit. We're talking mainstream, The Daily Show, all this shit. Actual fake news places running shit about how Pizzagate is fake news.
What? But they never deem it with an investigation. It's just
absolutely.
They go and
they just play it off as a giant joke.
Right.
But what the thing is, people actually look into this shit, and it gains more and more steam because
it's
all they
taboo.
Have to do is connect two or three dots, just like the people who are investigating it do, and then they believe it. So it's the court of public opinion has nothing to do with the media.
So when I was a Cub reporter in 2007, there was a highly contested mayor's race here in Indianapolis, and the mayor gave his budget address at some point in the fall before the election, and in the public comment section, the challenger stood up and said and gave his speech. Now, the challenger was not well-funded. Like, Mayor Peterson was the Democrat in Marion County, Blue County, and he was widely favored to win again, win a third term. Greg Ballard. Greg Ballard had $50,000 to $3 million, yeah. You know, and he was not likely to win. And I'm walking out with the little Cub reporter from Fox 59 who was hired for her looks. And I go, so how much are you guys going to cover of Ballard's presentation? She goes, we're not going to cover him at all. And I said, what do you mean? She goes, well, my editors made the decision that since he hasn't spent any money with us, we're not going to give him free advertising.
Absolutely.
And I go, you're telling me that 2 months out from an election, the challenger speaks and answers the budget, and you're not going to cover it? That's actual news.
It's not free if you pay for it.
Right. And so, right. And so she goes, I don't like it any more than you do. And she was gone within a month or two. But this is the for-profit press. But the non-profit press, like ProPublica, is beholden to a Ford Foundation or a Soros-backed foundation. You'll never get true independent news. NPR leans left. You're always going to have the tension between transparency and power. And even in 1972, excuse me.
You're excused.
I'm getting over a cold.
Sure isn't all this cat pheromones.
I didn't even get like the good sexy voice, you know, like when you get that. But there's a book called Poisoning the Press, Richard Nixon, Jack Anderson, and the Rise of Washington Scandal Culture by a guy named Mark Feldstein. And it's about this journalist, columnist Jack Anderson, wrote a column called Washington Merry-Go-Round. And it was basically the WikiLeaks of its day, and this guy would constantly publish behind-the-scenes information, and he was the guy that sort of the Mark Leibovich of his time, the Drudge of his time, people would send him information and he would publish it. Richard Nixon was so upset about this guy that
I wonder why.
It's rumored that he poisoned him and almost killed him. So
just like Megyn Kelly was poisoned.
Yeah, that you're right. Megyn Kelly, there's rumors in her book. She writes that she
heard when you cut your hair short as a woman, it poisons you.
Okay. I'm going to turn your mic off.
It's a joke.
So
I'm trying to keep it light. Come on. It's supposed to be a party. Bring everybody down with your fucking politics.
You didn't bring me cheese pizza.
Where's my hot dog?
I've got one on the way, yeah. And it's hairless.
So we need $65,000 worth of hot dogs.
Yeah.
From Chicago.
Right. So yeah, I mean, this has gone on forever, and there's always that tension between... So what makes a journalist? Glenn Greenwald, to me, is a journalist. Here's a guy who risks his life to tell the truth about governments and power, and somebody like... Anderson Cooper's a journalist who... Wolf Blitzer's not a journalist. Wolf Blitzer is somebody who stands there and reads the news.
Yeah.
Most of your local TV reporters are not journalists. Those are people that read crime reports and they write little blurbs. They're not journalists.
They're focus group tested and perform
exactly
the
right.
highest, and they read you what the journalists do.
Exactly.
They're there to sell ads.
The majority... The world is full of few journalists. Like, mm-hmm. they're just... There are... We're not talking 10,000 journalists in the world, you know? Like Michael Hastings, who was killed, he was a journalist.
Absolutely.
Why was he killed? I think Vice is doing a lot of great journalism. If you watch HBO, if you have HBO, they have a news night.
Their website's fantastic.
The nightly news that Vice produces is some of the best journalism that you can find. It's very interesting. But people who give opinions... should be protected by the First Amendment.
Absolutely.
But that doesn't necessarily make them journalists.
There's a very thin line.
Right. And so when you start talking about licensing journalists, which is where we will eventually get in this country, you're talking about people who will be handed out a license and they will have it revoked if they start pushing too much on power, on that local or federal power.
But no one will listen to them after that. It'll go on for... 5 years.
Because what'll happen is that, I mean, that's the nice thing is that with the internet, an alternative pops up that's unlicensed.
That was my point.
Yeah, like an open source, you know.
You're better off just reading comments on anonymous comments on a news blog website or something where people are just interested in a topic and they actually know what they're talking about.
I think what you've got to do is you've got to balance it out. You've got to start with your – don't just read libertarian sites like Rational Review.
Absolutely.
Rational Review, News Digest, Ben Swan, Reason.
The Atlantic, Slate.
Then you go to the news journals like The Economist, Atlantic, The New Yorker. Then you go to The Left. You go to Slate. You go to Raw Story, Think Progress. Then you go to the right with Red State. Human Events, Town Hall.
Like, there are very few places that do, like, thoughtful commentary. Like,
and then you go to the more edgy stuff, like Zero Hedge, maybe InfoWars.
Like, I stick to, like, Zero Hedge is an absolute mainstay for me. And, like, yes, they really flirt with the edge because they allow on non-traditional sources. But for their financial commentary, they are amazing. Like,
right.
They are real-time commentators on what people might miss in major stock market swings.
Yeah.
And that's something that not many people do. Even MarketWatch doesn't do. And they will find connections that end up being right. Like, they were the first people on the Sultan of Qatar wanting to build a competing pipeline through Syria, and that triggering the regime change. And they were even, you know, the Sultan of Qatar deployed a very far down the line Saudi prince to Russia before the Sochi Olympics and said that if you do not quit absolutely blank checking Assad, then you are going to have serious problems with the Sochi Olympics.
Yeah,
and that's, you know, you don't tell Putin that because then he put it in Sochi where there was one road in and it was absolutely impossible to do anything in that
you
kind of police state.
Shithole.
Yeah,
yeah, but I mean, he purposely put it in a place where, oh really? I'll let you try here.
Right.
You know, you will have an extremely difficult time trying to cause problems in Sochi.
Yeah.
And so they're writing this in 2000 and because the Sochi Olympics were 2014.
Mm-hmm.
So they wrote this probably around 2013.
Yeah.
And then turns out we're still watching this play out today.
Yeah.
Well, it's all, it all comes down to you've got to know your history of mm-hmm. anything, because anything that we're looking at today is pretty much 5-6 years in the past.
And it's all interconnected.
Building up,
yeah.
As far as geopolitics go, at least. And then, as far as where you get your information from, that's why I like you guys, because you'll list Reason, and then you'll go watch Mother Jones or something. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean,
I think it's reading. Yeah,
you guys are just like I am. I don't give a shit who wrote it. If I find it interesting, I will read it, and then I will literally Google the opposite of what I just read, and then read those articles, and then try to put a story together. Which it's sad that you have to do that now, but that's what you have to do if you want to get an honest opinion, and you have to know. In your mind, you got to have a compass too in yourself and judge what is right or wrong.
I think it's always been that way. You know, like I read Political Wire and Wonk Wire every day. I read or watch Vice. I listen to a lot of talk radio and podcasts. You know, Zero Hedge is a great piece of it. Reason does a great job of aggregating stuff. A lot of what you see is not actual new journalism.
No, we put a lot of trust into these institutions, and we shouldn't have.
Right. And so what you had in the 60s, the notion that we had all through the 20th century was that you have these institutional news outlets like...
Hold on, you need a microphone? Hold on.
Yeah, Mittens is now playing in the wrapping paper. And so you have these institutions like Walter Cronkite where everybody just trusts the news.
Absolutely.
And now we're at a point where you look at WMDs and you go, maybe we shouldn't just trust the news. Maybe we should have something a little bit broader. And I think what we have now is a much better setup because you have so many different opinions that you can access and determine what the truth is. And, you know, I'm okay that my friend Nate Gropp, who is a socialist open mic comedian, you know, or my friend Abby, that we're going to disagree. Like, when I talk to Nate, he and I, we look at the same elephant, and he feels the trunk, and I feel the legs, and we think it's, you know, a tree and a snake. You know what I mean?
A lot of people disagree on politics, but as far as disagreeing on what the facts are, I think it gets confusing a lot now, especially with the media.
I think we can agree on values. I think we can agree that there are things that are right and wrong. Like corruption is wrong, stealing, hitting, and it goes back to the non-aggression principle.
It all goes back to how do we solve it?
I think
most people can agree that stuff's wrong.
It's basic values. Don't hit your sister and don't take other people's stuff and don't take, you know, like that basic stuff is what we can all agree on. And I think that we're getting to a point where
I don't know that we agree on that so much anymore. Because I think if you look at the reaction to the United States is a republic, not a democracy, not a direct democracy.
Absolutely.
In this election, a lot of people, it finally hit them because the popular vote winner was a Democrat and the Republican was so just beyond the realm of comprehension, they are willing to indulge corruption for the greater good. And there's been a lot of that. And that wasn't necessarily always the case in the United States or in the press.
They are
very much adopted a mindset that there is a greater good in anything to stop even the Democratic election to rules we all have agreed to. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're seeing that without question in the press, and like it just happened to me the other day. I use Feedly for all my news, mm-hmm. and then I categorize it, you know, conservative, libertarian, liberal, and then I have like a few that have always, like, to me, Washington Post has always, for most of its existence, has always been a centrist, you know, great news organization. Right. Politico is in there for me, and then Financial Times is in there. Those are my three that have been stalwarts.
The Hill,
yeah, and those are actually the four that were in there, and then I logged into Feedly with an old login and realized that it wasn't until I don't know why I changed it, but then I compared the two, and now the only one that exists that is centrist is Politico, mm-hmm. and then Financial Times. Everything else, like Washington Post, is now in the liberal.
Oh yeah,
it really .
And so there really isn't a centrist. Politico does a good time of just reporting the news, and so does The Hill.
Right.
But they, even their commentary, like in their magazine, is left.
It's not left. Like I don't want to get into the left. I mean, yes, there is left.
Or it's anti-Trump.
It's anti-Trump and it's pro-power. So
yeah, it's pro-authoritarian.
That's another problem too.
A lot of people fall into, oh, that's leftist, that's
right.
progressive, or whatever. I don't know. It's super. The terms now are so loose. It's so
Yeah.
It's annoying.
So I was looking, I have Reason, The Hill, Politico, The Washington Post, The New York Times. I have a bunch of news pinned, so I see that first in my feed. And The Hill updates constantly, so I see them all the time. And The Hill updated a story about Donald Trump getting a command coin, which if you ever, officers and the military can give you a coin that's a special commemorative item of... I'm not going to lie, I don't know a ton about it. I just know that they have these coins. I've been given one, and it's like a significant
a
thing.
Token.
Yeah. And they're beautiful. And so Donald Trump was given one of these command coins, and the article was just written like that. It was written without bias. It was Donald Trump was given
receives
a command coin,
a coin.
at this thing today by this guy.
Which is how the news should be.
Exactly. And I'm sitting there, and I'm so confused. I read it four times because I was just like, I don't get it.
Don't you read that shit, and you're like, why are you fucking writing this?
Well,
and that's where I'm at. That, I mean,
that's when my brain...
We're so used to Facebook.
My brain is so conditioned to a certain way with these stories.
Absolutely.
That I'm sitting there going... I don't understand. What's the point of the story? Like,
there isn't a point.
There wasn't a slant. It wasn't anti-Trump.
Yeah.
Because the news is now always anti. It's always Trump did this, and this is bad, and here's the sentiment of the story. And so when they wrote a straight story about a Donald Trump thing.
It was cognitive dissonance.
That was devoid of positive or negative bias. It was just facts.
It just blows your mind.
My brain couldn't compute it at all.
Absolutely.
It was, and that's when I realized like how far the press has gone. To
it's all clickbait
yeah.
anymore. Honestly, it's
nobody wants to be seen as pro-Trump because if you are if you are seen as pro-Trump, like people would rather be liked than be honest. People would rather listen to Alex.
That's fucked up.
Let's say Alex Jones is telling the truth, and he had 85 million people, individuals in this country that listened to him the week of the election. Which 85 in a country of 330 million in the week of the election, that's hard to swallow. But let's say he's telling the truth.
That's 20 more than million that voted for Trump, though.
Right. So let's say he's telling the truth.
Which is fucked up.
That 80 million people listen to him. How many people, you know, the saturation of that media outlet that's bigger than any media outlet that you can think of? And nobody would ever post that they listen to Alex Jones. People won't post that they listen to Glenn Beck.
That's right. Nobody posts that they voted for Trump.
People won't say that they voted for Trump because they want to be liked by their friends more than they want to be honest.
And it's also the backlash. They know there's a certain leaning in the media that if you like Trump or if you even agree with one of his policies, oh, Bruce Jenner can piss in whatever bathroom he wants to in Trump Tower. Nobody will run that because the left might find that, you know.
That's cognitive
yeah,
dissonance,
Hillary
too.
Yeah, and Hillary Clinton is gay marriage is okay in, what, 2009? I mean, it's just complete jackassery,
so,
if you ask me.
Which brings me to the credit score, the social credit system that's taking place in China that they've been rolling out in this one province in China. And basically, they... Think of anything that you purchase on Amazon.
Where's James Neese at when you need
Think of anything that you post on Facebook, any tweet, any email that you send. If you get a traffic ticket, if you get a warning from a cop, anything. It all goes to your social credit score. So think of it as your FICO score for your citizenship, essentially. And this was started in China as a way basically to control people. And this is in The Economist. The title is Creating a Digital Totalitarian State. Today is December 22nd. We posted it on the Facebook page. A pilot scheme in Suning County in Jiangsu province north of Shanghai gives clues about what such a system might mean in practice. Starting in 2010, the local government awarded people points for good behavior, such as winning a national honor of some kind, and deducted points for everything from minor traffic offenses to illegally petitioning higher authorities for help. Those who scored highest were eligible for rewards, such as fast-track promotion at work or jumping the queue for public housing. The project was a failure. The data on which it was based were patchy. Amid a public backlash in China Youth Daily, a state-owned newspaper criticized the system. A state-owned newspaper, by the way.
Can I take a guess of why it failed?
Why?
Who's going to report shit that's a minor crime if they think that the state's going to take away brownie points for them?
Well, but that's part of it. It's the state outlining what they want you to do or not do.
But the state owns all.
It eventually crashed just because it had too much data. The state-owned newspaper said it said political data such as petitions should not have been included, declaring that people should have rated government employees instead of the government has been rating the people. And another state-run newspaper, the Beijing Times, even compared the scheme with the good citizen certificates issued by Japan during its wartime occupation of China. Jumping ahead into the article a little bit, the project is a response to the party's biggest problems, the collapse of confidence in public institutions and the need to keep track of the changing views and interest of China's population without letting them vote. It seeks to collect information on the honesty of ordinary citizens and public officials and companies alike. We'll jump ahead again. The list at the heart of the social credit system is called Judgment Defaulters List, composed of those who have defied a court order. If two people or companies have a contract dispute, or if couples are fighting over a divorce or child support, the parties can go to a civil court for judgment. If the losing party then defaults on payment, he or she is put on a list. Names of offenders are displayed on an electronic crawl outside courthouses. According to the Supreme Court, there were 3.1 defaulters on the list, a million defaulters on the list by the end of 2015. Skip ahead. All countries have problems enforcing civil judgments, but it is exceptionally long and made available to... I'm reading out of an actual newspaper here, so sorry, I'm flipping. It's not normal. It's not natural. I should be looking at a screen. Dozens of government departments and party organizations, all of which can apply for their own sanctions to defaulters. People on the list can be prevented from buying airplane, bullet train, or first or business class rail tickets, selling, buying, or building a house, or enrolling their children in expensive fee-paying schools. There are instructions on offenders joining or being promoted in the party or the army on receiving honors and titles. If the defaulter is a company, it may not issue shares or bonds except for an investment or work on government projects. By August of 2016, defaulters have been stopped from buying airline tickets about 5 million times. This goes far beyond the normal legal and so at worst, this is social credit project is a 360-degree digital surveillance panopticon. But China treats personal information differently than the West does, so we have different views on data. Where they're a Chinese communist country and it's single-party rule, we still want our private data. We don't view the state as all-powerful, yet they still do it anyways.
Just don't tell us.
Big data is in democracies are not designed for social control. China's explicitly would be. It is basically built to look for quote-unquote terrorists, which are also defined as dissidents. It is telling that the Western intelligence agencies have tried to use data mining schemes to identify individual terrorists but fails because of an excess of false positives. A commentary in the Beijing Times complained about the plans to punish people who did not pay their electricity bills by limiting foreign travel and bank borrowing. So you see this social credit score where they take, like the NSA has, all of this information and they funnel it into a single basket, and then they give you a rating as a citizen. So, you know, Tad would be a 2. On a scale of 10.
Oh, thank God. Oh,
Greg would be an 8. I'd be a 3. Hosting a libertarian podcast might knock us down on the good citizen list a little bit. Because we just
great. I've been in a gulag right now.
So it is a way, and then from there they can, you know, work with companies and say, "Eh, you don't get that 10% off sale. Your M perks at Meijer aren't going to work because you didn't pay your traffic ticket." It becomes a complete panopticon, which is defined as...
It's the basically Jeremy Bentham, utilitarian philosopher. It was a prison where one person could watch everyone inside the prison.
Right. And it's it's so creepy that it's illegal now. But you go around and there's ways to view people. But, you know, this is, if we're not careful as a society, this is where we're heading. I mean, it really becomes, I'm not going to say Mark of the Beast stuff, but, you know, it, technology is a cursing and a blessing because we, if we aren't careful, you see so many people arguing for Facebook to begin censoring quote-unquote fake news.
And they've already rolled it out.
And they have.
Without thinking of the consequences.
Right. We've asked these companies, and realistically everybody only uses four major companies when they go on the internet. You use Google products, Apple products, Facebook products, or Twitter.
Even outside of that, you're looking at nine major corporations who own a shit ton of everything that's sold in the United States.
Right. And so when we're asking Facebook to expand their reach into censoring fake news, everybody's against fake news. It's just like everybody's against racists. Yeah. Nobody wants racists to have free speech.
Nobody likes turds in their Snickers.
Okay. So
that's the common cause we all unite around.
That's a good point.
So give me your fucking info and I will
sell you a
turd
free Snicker.
I don't like turds in my Snickers. Let's have an FDA.
That's exactly right.
But then people don't look at it and they go, "Oh, well this doesn't work."
Well, I trust this guy. You mean the guy who said fuck him?
It's funny. It's like, so that idea that China's implementing, it actually started in Silicon Valley. It was a company called Blippi. Mm-hmm. And Blippi was a social experience for credit card purchases to create a new social credit score. And to anytime you bought something, it gave you the option to share it via social media or not, and then offered a deal to anyone in your network. Mm-hmm. But what it was basically going to do is create all the buyer behavior for individuals, create a alternative to the FICO system, and then sell that data to companies looking at assessing credit risk, as well as selling it to marketing companies in order to target people with real-time offers through social media. Because it failed miserably.
Because your credit score would be higher if you were buying more expensive things and paying it off rather than buying candy canes on credit.
Right.
And it was a comprehensive system. Like anytime you acquired financial, financing, you know, and it allowed you to share that.
Isn't that like taught in finance schools now? Like Blippi or
Blippi failed miserably because the U.S. consumer.
The story of it though.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was a Harvard case study. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like, so it was, Blippi ended up being just a huge rejection of consumers wanting their data available. And so it makes sense that since the private market wasn't rewarded, that consumers actually wanted this, that the offer of being able to get discounts and that type of thing wasn't big enough for joining into this type of surveillance system, that only government, where it has absolute authority, could mandate it and make it where you don't have the ability to opt out.
It's like the idea that you have to have the carbon credit system to get people to, you have to have a financial penalty for companies to start shifting towards green energy because they aren't going to do it because it's not in their interest. So you've got to create a perverse incentive to get them to go the other way.
There needs to be an entity with absolute authority in order to force it.
Right. You have to have government force to get people to get off of, you know, non-renewable energy.
Yeah, and they sell it as a replacement for the FICO system, when in the reality it's actually a tool to manipulate behavior.
Sure.
You know, and to collect unpaid taxes and judgments and liens and to basically socially shame anyone that hasn't acted in accordance with government by actively publicizing their behavior.
They have rolling outside of the courthouse in China. This person is a bad citizen. This is their score.
Shaming for, you know.
It is.
You know.
Yeah. Well, do you if you have a if you have a bad credit score, do you want that up on, you know, the front of your car? Do you
China
want that?
China is communist. We forget that a lot.
But
I mean, they are a communist country.
How far off from that leap? If you have the right propaganda,
we love technology.
Right.
I mean, and we could completely jump that shit.
Well, think about it. I mean, you already get published online if you get a DUI, or you already get published all the mugshots are readily available and indexed via Google.
Think about how much all your information's online.
Right.
Anything, anything. You could be doxxed at any minute.
How many of us watch Snowden and really, how many people actually give a shit about all the stuff that
nobody
majority of people still think that he's, you know, he helped terrorists.
Tad Western does. That's why I don't go by my real name.
All right. So leading into, you know, intelligence is important, though, because intelligence is how, you know, you fight the global war on terror.
I don't think there is.
That's why. Let me set up the next topic.
Well, number one.
Don't make me come over there with a roll-up newspaper.
The Earth is flat. It's not a globe, so that's where you were wrong in the first.
So I'm reading this. I'm going to kill Tyler. I want you to know that. Get a hold of him.
I will close my eyes. I didn't see
it's
anything.
It's flat. Have Tad, you not read the books?
Tad's out of control tonight.
It is a party, baby.
So I'm reading Michael Flynn's book. He's what? He's head of the 17 intelligence agencies. What's his title in the Trump administration?
So he didn't get the NSA chief
he's
position.
Not the,
he got,
he's like head of all the, you know, with it, there's one role.
Yeah. Central Intelligence Chief.
Look up Michael Flynn's title.
Yeah,
please,
his position. I know. I mean,
I'll give you his actual title.
He got NSA director. Or did Pompeo?
No, that's Pompeo. Because, no, Mike Flynn is in charge of, there's one position where all 17 intelligence agencies report to one person, and that person reports to the president.
Yeah.
And that is Michael Flynn.
Yeah.
And so he wrote a book called The Field of Fight, mm-hmm. How We Can Win Against the Global War Against Radical Islam and Its Allies. It's really interesting read, 150 pages or so. So it's not a terribly long read.
Yeah, NSA.
Okay, so he's the National Security Advisor.
So he's not in charge of the NSA, because that's Pompeo,
right.
But he's the NSA.
No, he's the clearinghouse.
Yeah.
And so far what I've learned about him, and I like this about him, is that he is, as Larry would say, he is a truth teller.
What's his views on aliens?
And so he is somebody that is, from reading this, supremely competent.
Oh, my.
And is somebody that has he hates the bureaucracy. And so he outlines the failings of Iraq and a lot of our intelligence agencies. And it is because people just want to be yes men. They want to say, you know, they want to please the president. And he wrote about this book called The War of Numbers by Sam Adams. And he wrote a book about Vietnam, and here I'll just read a quick portion of it. Adams carefully studied our intelligence on the Viet Cong and found that if the numbers were correct, there were very few of them left, since the number of deaths and desertions greatly exceeded the level of recruitment. This was palpably false, and Adams relentlessly exposed the nonsense for the better part of 10 years, all to no avail. CIA and the military had their numbers that showed we were winning the war and would not change them. Adams was right. But the official numbers were endorsed over and over and over. How could this be? Part of the answer is that the intelligence community was not being honest about the gains that President Lyndon Johnson and the commanding generals, Westmoreland was the most famous, were claiming to the public. The Viet Cong were shrinking, America was winning. So even when Adams and others presented more accurate data showing the enemy was much stronger than we admitted, it was dismissed. Nowadays, we call this the politicization of intelligence, but its older name is don't deliver bad news to your leaders. You don't want to be that messenger, and so you just keep quiet. This is what appears to be going on in our intelligence system today regarding our fight against radical Islamists. And it all starts at the very top of our government. The president sets the tone and priorities. This doesn't surprise me. The policymakers and the administrations of both George W. Bush and Barack Obama did not want bad news either. This was particularly evident concerning Iran's role in the war. Then he goes on to talk about the surge and how much that helped. And he talks a little bit about how important the role of intelligence is in fighting terrorism. And we'll get back to that. But I want to talk about the politicization of intelligence and this particular passage, what that might mean about a Trump approach towards the intelligence agencies and radical Islam. To me, putting Michael Flynn, based on that passage, putting him in charge of collecting all of the intelligence and reporting back to him, that's a good sign in my book.
Yeah.
Because that's somebody who does, he is basically outlining and saying, I'm going to give you bad news, things that you aren't going to like that may be politically unpopular, and Donald Trump said, well, you're my guy then.
He's a guy that's been is a controversial pick alone because he was one of the very early people to on Twitter retweet before his appointment came out about Hillary, the Clinton's the scandal with the sex trafficking that was released in the WikiLeaks cables and then the connections being tied. He went ahead and retweeted that. And then also he was one of the first to retweet about the disappearance of the former Clinton CEO, Eric Braverman.
Yeah.
And so he was, you know, a lot of people couldn't believe that there's this guy that, you know, will dabble and touch these things while he's under consideration. But to me, that's a good sign.
He in the Iraq war, he was eventually elevated to be in charge of all the intelligence gathering for the American military in the Iraq war. I mean, he was the intelligence officer for Petraeus, for McChrystal, as they fought in Iraq and Afghanistan.
And he was an early proponent of sort of his view of the world and the way it's sort of the way it's sort of grouped in modern day, or the way it exists, that framework is his from this book, in that really it is a Russia and China with North Korea and then Shia Islamic countries aligned, when then the United States and the West, and then you know, Australia, Europe, those types of countries, NATO countries, and then the rogue actor are the Sunni Shia countries that are the global disruption and the financing of all terrorism or any way that sort of destabilizes regimes and uses their money to start destabilization, and then tries to get one of the actors from the two sides between the China-Russian alliance or the U.S. alliance to come in and
undermine the other.
Or, yeah, they look for strategic allies in order to topple regime change.
That's what's going on with Russia right now.
Right, and like he laid this out years ago, and it ended up coming true, and I think that's a real... You know, that's a real feather in the cap, because at the time the China-Russian alliance wasn't something that was really shaping up that way. They looked to be more so fighting for who was going to be the top dog in that part of the world. Right. And I love that this is a guy that is not afraid of anyone. He will report any type of intelligence, even if it isn't true. He will, I mean, he'll tell you, he'll condition it, but he will still let it get up the chain. Because as you saw with the weapons of mass destruction, a lot of intelligence was being filtered out that would have disproved any that would have necessitated the invasion.
Man. He was a bad guy.
So here's another passage. A similar failure is happening today with ISIS and Al-Qaeda. There's plenty of information, but it conflicts with the narrative of our policymakers. Let me back up a little bit, because he's talking about how the surge ended up succeeding, and it's because they completely changed their strategy, and George Bush, instead of continuing to just eat the failure, he changed the strategy. He put Robert Gates and Petraeus in charge, changed strategy, and took the hit. You remember in 06, it was just, oh, we're losing in Iraq, because we were legitimately losing in Iraq.
But you have to realize they're all from the same branch.
Right. So, basically, we had plenty of information. That wasn't the problem, but we didn't get the picture totally right. It wasn't an analytic failure, in my opinion. It was driven, as so many intelligence failures are, by a policy of failure from the top ranks. Our senior officers had wrongly concluded that we were causing the uprising in Iraq by our presence. Therefore, when the Marines asked for more troops, our senior leaders, notably General Casey and the Joint Chiefs and Donald Rumsfeld, weren't inclined to approve the request. A similar failure is happening today with ISIS and Al-Qaeda. There's plenty of information, but it conflicts with the narrative of our policymakers. When politicians are wedded to an unreal storyline for their own convenience and purpose, the intelligence gets suppressed and bottled up. One disastrous outcome of this willful decision-making is the 2015 Intel scandal at CENTCOM in Tampa. This scandal basically goes on and on. But I thought that was a really indicative path. I mean, the military knows what they're doing, but in his assessment, it's the narrative of politicians that really rules our war-making and not our soldiers. And he goes on to basically say the way that we won in the surge in Afghanistan in portions was by putting the mid-level guys, the guys who are on the ground, in charge, and taking that immediate decision-making out of the hands of CENTCOM, which was completely paralyzed by political decision-making.
Right.
And so
it took those types of decisions out of the American political narrative that would have created like the paralysis that did, you know.
So this is a very specific when I think Trump is talking about, we're going to give decisions back to the soldiers. I'm trying to learn to translate Trump is what I'm doing here.
Don't.
All this is, you know, we're going to put they're going to take the war out of the politicians' hands and put it in the soldiers' hands. This is where he's getting it. He's getting it from Flynn.
Right.
It was basically saying, yeah, to defeat ISIS, we need to go with what our commanders say, and that
they can't wait, you know, right. 30 days for a decision to be made on what the political backlash will be.
And these people aren't on the same political spectrum as Americans are. Mm-hmm.
Well, they're given an objective. You know, like they're given an objective. The objective of the military is to win. It isn't to democracy build. It isn't to do XYZ. They're giving an objective to meet, and once they do, they're kind of. You know, you're asking them to do something that isn't their natural function, to stick around and maintain order. And so when you instead rob them of the ability to carry out any objection and take everything off the table, then you are saying, yes, you need to win, but it's more important how you win.
Yeah, because you got to make it look good for who's running for re-election back home. You're not fighting the great evil of World War II, Germany, you know, destroy all Germans. You are literally fighting villages. You don't even know who you're fighting.
Yeah, it's a covert network that lives amongst the people that it's trying to.
And the politicians don't understand that because there's honestly no bill that you can really pass that'll say, yeah, take out the terrorists. I mean, that's a blanket freaking cause that you don't know who you're going to take out. It's better off analyzed on the ground. I mean, people who are there and who know what the hell is going on.
You can't take that
to Washington, even if it's a week and a half out, because you never know who's going to get bought out.
It's a good sign, though. I mean, he's willing to listen to a person like General Flynn. That's not the status quo.
Right.
The status quo are people
who. He knows what's going on.
Yeah, and like the status quo are people who, you know, they have a small part of a lot of generals wants to be that appointment that he's going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And so they played the part that way, and it worked out contrarian, where by being controversial and by being willing to speak out against the way things have been going on, he got rewarded with somebody who is contrarian.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same thing with Mattis. Like, Mattis should have been America's greatest general 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Instead, it's taken till now, and he hates, you know, the highest levels of his career.
They put him on the shortest leash that they could have ever put him on because they were like, oh, this guy might actually do something.
Yeah, I mean, he was ahead of CENTCOM, and so he was the one, because he had such respect, he could quiet the disagreements that were going on and make it get it to the point where it didn't become public scandal, like where you had a McChrystal speaking out or something like that.
Flynn, who got fired by Obama for testifying that we had the wrong strategy.
Yeah.
And Obama fired him for same with McChrystal, who gave an interview to, was it the Rolling Stone?
Yeah, Rolling Stone magazine.
And basically said, no, Obama's got it wrong. And so he got fired. And so you're seeing people who were successful. You know, Petraeus obviously leaked confidential information to his girlfriend and, you know, had to check with his parole officer instead of becoming Secretary of State. You know, so you have these successful guys who seem to be neutered by the Obama administration.
Absolutely. I mean, Obama was already at a disadvantage because he was seen as someone whose military credibility was neutered from the beginning. He wasn't of that strain. He never acted like the war in Iraq. You know, he never gave any respect to the soldiers who fought, regardless of their leaders, putting them in a bad firefight.
Yeah.
And so he never... That was always a very real threat to his narrative, was military dissension. And so anyone that did dissent, they were immediately had to be eliminated, or else, you know, he had a tough time being considered the leader of the United States military.
Either way, we were already in it. It had nothing to do with his decision.
Right. He just was so inexperienced in that realm any false step could have been a major, you know, major landmine.
And anyone who told him that, oh, we got to take more action, wipe these guys out, he's going to say no.
Right. Right. And like,
because it's going to look bad on him, but At the end of the day, you're going to wipe out people.
I mean, it's good, though. It's a good sign that you have someone like him, someone like General Flynn, and then you have someone like Mattis coming in. And then as well, you know, they floated the idea. It doesn't look like Bolton's even going to get a deputy appointment. But Bolton's got a very wrong, different worldview than those individuals.
I don't care if he – a rumor came out. The Washington Post wrote a story that – Trump is picking people based solely on their looks and on their the way that they project themselves. You know, Mattis looks like Jimmy Mad Dog Mattis looks just like Patton. You know, Flynn is very cut. Tillerson looks like a Secretary of State, where John Bolton has this horrible mustache. And so the mustache alone was why he didn't get picked for Secretary of State.
I can see Trump saying that 100%.
Right.
You ever read his book? You should. It's right there in hardcover.
But it is true. Like, yeah, there is the projection. If you have John Bolton walking in and being a nerd and with the mustache, I mean, it's he wants to project an image because he understands that part
People
of power.
People forget that Trump went to military school. And
yeah, high school.
Yeah.
He... Projection as far as the military goes, mm-hmm. no one's going to look up to, or the perception is pretty much everything.
That's why I don't
it's
usually.
A tough man.
That's why I don't usually believe what he tweets. Like this nuclear thing, it's like he's just saying stuff to position things. It's propaganda.
He is always three steps ahead. He knows what he's tweeting. He's not a stupid person.
It is.
We went over this 100 fucking times.
But John Bolton is somebody who is a neocon.
His worldview is different than everyone else that's been appointed so far.
Yeah,
but that's good.
So, exactly. But
keeping a neocon out,
we have to remember as libertarians that. You've got to get these people through appointments. And so if you – this is part of the progress of backing them down. And that's why I look at contrarians being – contrarians to the globalist point of view, the contrarian view of international entanglements. I'm not an isolationist, but I'm a non-interventionist, and I don't want us to have too many entanglements around the world. It's defense. It's not about offense. Libertarians are not weak. We don't want to be weak. We want to protect ourselves, and if you hit us, we will hit you back. But we don't need to take the responsibility for every country in the world. The Economist this week in Aleppo basically said, you know, well, it's Putin won in Aleppo. And it's Obama's fault because he stepped back from the world and said we need to do international approaches and do it as the United States as one nation as opposed to the leader of the world.
We're entangled, though, in multiple things.
Well, a lot of decisions
off the get-go. It's not starting from a clean slate.
Well, it's been 70 years now of a foreign policy you know, a worldview where a lot of investments have been made by countries.
Absolutely.
With the expectation that it would continue regardless of regime.
And that makes it even muckier once you get money involved.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that and then they have made strategic decisions like, you know, NATO existing. And then now all of a sudden the United States, rather than being openly hostile towards Russia, has appointed a Secretary of State that's been given basically a medal of friendship with
Absolutely.
The Russian government.
And Trump pretty much said, fuck NATO, right to their face
yeah.
during the entire election.
Right, but like, you know, by appointing someone like Tillerson, you make it you don't really need it as much because you have someone.
Dad, you take that shot of Fireball, I'm going to have to kick you out.
Do you need one?
No.
I'm not to five yet. I'm only at four. I have not annoyed the cat. The cat is on the table and it's sleeping on my present.
He's Uncle Tad.
Not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse.
Uncle Tad's a drunk ranting at the table.
I'm not drunk ranting about anything. I'm telling the truth, damn it.
I'm a truth teller.
Truth bombs.
Yeah.
Where's your hater shades?
Are you trying to censor me?
I didn't
think you a bomber.
Just let us talk.
An interesting... you know, because we're going to talk a little bit about the cabinet as well. And I do think, you know, a big part of what I found interesting about Trump is, one, he would not, I mean, none of these people, like, they're, yes, they are known to the establishment, but they are all people who have at one point or the other rubbed the establishment the wrong way and watched their career take a hit because of it.
They're not interested in the Washington dinner parties.
No, I mean, the biggest contention he had about accepting the post as Secretary of Defense was that he'd have to live in D.C., and he didn't want to.
Right. Tillerson is a guy who worked his way up through the ranks at ExxonMobil. He's a Texan, and, you know, his favorite activity is, like, mowing the lawn.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's a guy,
regular,
he's an engineer.
Regular, normal house, just not like a flashy guy. Here's a guy who's a multimillionaire who... He's not interested in the power of, I'm sure on some level he has to be interested in the power of being the CEO of a company and the Secretary of State, but he doesn't strike me as a John Kerry who I need to make sure that I send Andrea Mitchell a birthday card.
Right. He's not going to be concerned about all the perks of office. You know, he's not going to, you know, enjoy hosting fabulous dinner parties the highest of society.
In reading This Town by Mark Leibovich, I didn't see Matus or Tillerson once.
How many of these people would Jeb have appointed?
No, none.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that gives you the...
And like, that's the thing is like...
Oh, drain the swamp.
Yeah, a lot of Hillary and Jeb's appointments would have been very similar because there wouldn't have been very little change from...
It would have been Obama's cabinet.
Right.
Is very little been.
Difference.
There is... What Donald Trump signals is exactly what's happening in the rest of the world. Really?
Made in the cat bowl. You don't even have cat bowls. You're so poor you just feed them out of the cans.
You brought those cans of tuna. That was your
present from like 2 years ago.
I know, but they're
that's
just...
not good anymore. You're feeding them bad tuna. Maybe that's why I smell.
Mittens loves them. So,
I'm kidding.
What was I saying?
The appointments from 2 years ago.
Well, you have a decided... And this is where, like, the Alex Jones people are right. Like, you have a network of globalists in the Council on Foreign Relations, the...
Bilderberg.
What's the one that...
Brookings Institute.
Brookings Institute. What's the one that... Center for American Progress, mm-hmm. the Heritage Foundation.
All of the well-funded think tanks.
All these Washington think tanks just cycle in and cycle out people for these administrations. That's the point of them, is to have well-trained diplomats, well-trained military men, well-trained commerce people, well-trained treasury people, so that when your team wins, these people can move into those seats. And what Donald Trump, that's where Bush and Clinton both would have put in similar thinking, lines of thinking. Hillary Clinton is as neoconservative as Jeb Bush would have been. You know, when somebody says, well, Donald Trump's going to start World War III. And I sit there and I go,
exact opposite.
I think we don't exactly know, but he's less likely to than Hillary Clinton, whose track record is pretty clear.
Well, I mean, only
and
one
she's
country
going
could
to,
trigger it.
She will lose World War III. You know, and so I look at the people that Donald Trump is appointing, and I'm not saying that any of this is libertarian or that he is libertarian, because I don't think that in a pure libertarian or constitutional Republican universe, you're going to have an administration appointed. If Gary Johnson won the presidency...
That's what I think is an interesting topic to discuss.
And would he be able to... Would he have to start at a Flynn... Matus, Tillerson type, anti-power, to a degree.
As much as you can
as
be.
As much as you can be.
But you have to have someone who's actually...
I mean, for God's sake, he put Rick Perry in charge of the Energy Department. 75% of the Energy Department is about nuclear power. Barack Obama put a nuclear physicist in charge of
Stephen
the
Chu.
Energy Department. And Donald Trump appoints the guy who forgot the agency he was going to abolish.
He wants to get rid of it.
A
so
Texas,
that's the most libertarian thing you could do.
A Texas oil man, yeah. So you look at appointments like that. You look at the education secretary.
DeVoe is amazing.
And she is all for...
Charter schools nationally.
Charter schools and school choice. So these are people that can make it through Senate confirmations. They're not libertarian. I'm not saying that.
That's the point though. Is that on the agency they're in charge of, they are the most libertarian and admissible individual you could appoint.
Right. Now I know that there are libertarians.
There
are people that are listening to this squirming in their chair, going, "Are you guys endorsing Donald Trump?"
No.
Absolutely.
No, it's Tad is. He's wearing the hat. But you have to look at it and go, this is where we're at. This is what's possible right now. And so are you willing to look at this with a clear and open eyes and say, all right, let's evaluate this choice by choice. Let's evaluate Trump decision by decision. Or are you just never Trump, no matter what, even if he's the most libertarian president since Coolidge, and you're going to sit there and fight him? I mean, to me, I just want to be open-minded and go, the guy's not president yet, so I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. So far, he's making some decisions that signal he's moving in the right direction and that he will go our way. He will be more non-interventionist. He will have a chance to massively reshape the Fed by instituting at least two of the governors. possibly replace Janet Yellen.
Supreme Court.
He's going to get
Supreme Court.
He's betting Mike Lee.
Right, Mike Lee, which
would be a phenomenal appointment from
Ted
a libertarian
Cruz?
Perspective.
Ted Cruz.
So we
Judge Napolitano.
Judge Napolitano
on
the list.
Mike Lee and Napolitano are on your short list. That's
yeah.
Like this is what for me last April I started like I don't know what it was but I started thinking about everything through the framework of if Gary won and if Donald won and what you could actually do, and it became about all right. What actual people could you get through?
The Supreme Court is the major issue.
Right. But, I mean, it became about, at a certain point, what based on what Trump said, the big conflicts from libertarianism, which I don't think, like, the trade war thing to me is just vintage him threatening the most awful thing imaginable in order to get a more fair playing field.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And but you have to be willing to make that bet. And, like, to him, he's too dumb to think that he could. I mean, if he followed through on protectionism, you'd get Great Depression. We already know this. And he's not stupid. Yeah. But he also needs leverage in getting a fair trade deal done to be able to be the advocate for the American worker he's been claiming to.
The truth is the BRIC countries, Brazil, Russia, India, and China, you know, these emerging second world, near first world countries, they're important trading partners for
Huge.
Us. We need their resources and they need to sell their goods to us.
Right.
Because they're trying to grow middle class.
Yeah, we're mutually, you know, it's mutually assured destruction.
They're competitors. They're not enemies.
Yeah. And like, so like that's to me is like, that was never a real threat, but you needed to follow through on it in order to actually get something where you get more blue collar jobs back. And that's who benefits from an economic boom and not finance and Wall Street, where it's all, you know, service economy analysis and then basically white collar jobs only.
Yeah, he's been for the people, and that's what his run's been for.
Right. And so, but then I started thinking about, like, all right, let's say Gary was in charge of appointing a Secretary of Defense. And if Gary's in charge of appointing a Secretary of Defense, he is in a real pickle. Like, just assume he wins. Gary has not been preparing.
A Republican or a Democrat?
Well, he hasn't been, I mean, he hasn't been prepared. And really, it doesn't matter if you pick anyone from D.C.
Yeah.
So, Gary, let's say he decided to pick Ron Paul or Rand Paul or, you know, these types of folks. Gary wasn't really – it would be tough for Gary to do a transition because he wouldn't have a bench to call on.
Right.
And even if Absolutely. He did, he would have a really tough time getting anyone confirmed because
– all they're going to do is vote in there.
Rand Paul, even being from the Senate, probably wouldn't get confirmed to any appointment within the
next. Sure.
No way.
Ron probably wouldn't.
Yeah.
They would do everything Ron's they too could old. To block him.
Andrew, and like Napolitano might get a Supreme Court, you know, turn in hindsight, but I mean, he's still going to be a tough sell.
Right.
And like, in order to get him, you're going to have someone that can bully him through.
Sure.
Gary wouldn't be able to create a backlash press war in order to get someone like Napolitano on.
Yeah.
And I just started thinking about, like, it's going to be really interesting because Trump is someone who, of the Republican in the primaries, is the most non-interventionist.
Right.
He's the most bombastic and uses the most wild language, but at the end of the day, he's the one calling the Iraq war a mistake.
Yeah.
And so that means he's probably going to have the least war hawk appointment to defense.
I appreciate that he's beholden to no one.
Yeah.
You know, I do think that he is... I take back absolutely nothing that I said about him through the entire presidential race. I think he's still... I think that he grabbed women by the pussy. I think he is all that happened. You know, I don't. I disregard Rob Kendall's convenient excuse. Like when you're caught on tape saying you do something, and then 10 women come forward and say you did it after you lied on a debate and said you didn't. You challenged them. They're going to step up and they're going to say it. So, like as an individual, as a politician, I don't trust him. In any way, shape, or form.
You should never trust a politician.
No, I'm looking at this and I'm going, there's going to be a lot of stuff that as a libertarian, I'm going to hate that this guy does it.
Absolutely, and you should.
Right.
He's not a libertarian candidate at any...
No.
At any flip of the coin. But as far as I'm concerned, I don't see him as a Democrat or Republican, and I think he's going to do whatever the hell he thinks.
He's a nationalist.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, he's going to make what he thinks is the best deal
for the country,
and the people in the country, whether you like that or not.
Well, that's the thing.
That's
that is not how that hasn't
it's
been standard operating procedure for the United States government.
Yeah.
for 50 years, 60 years,
and he's going to put people in place who are going to.
You know, when he's
going to be firing people.
When he tweets out that he wants to essentially have a nuclear arms race with Russia and China.
That's a dick swing competition.
I'm hoping you're right.
100%. You realize you get... This guy, he... Read that book. He is a master of manipulation, words, negotiations, whatever he wants. And we gave him nuclear power.
Yeah.
He can literally...
Which is worthless.
It is, because it's mutual destruction.
Yeah, anyone, if you fire one,
now,
anyone
if,
else that
if he
has
go,
it,
if he
the
go,
world's over.
Right. If he goes to like Ecuador or something and says, we're going to use nukes on you, you guarantee you we're building a ton of like 150-story gold towers in Ecuador. But we're not going... He's talking about Soviet Union, and he...
Yeah, I mean, you got to remember, he's also a first-time president, and so he cannot be allowed... You know, he's
going to be a politician. He's a first-time politician.
No, but I mean, he's actively preventing a Bay of Pigs incident. Like, Kennedy went in, and then it was something where he was tested.
As soon as you show weakness.
Well, you're tested because you're new.
Trump will never show weakness.
Whereas, like, with Trump, he has still not even been sworn in, and so he is going... He's subscribing to that madman Richard Nixon theory.
Absolutely.
Where you come in and you freeze everyone with threats.
Right.
And it's all intentional, because that's just what's going to end up happening regardless, is you either take the proactive or the reactive role.
And if
you take the reactive role,
think about what's actually going to happen.
Well, if you take the reactive role too, and you're someone who doesn't like to be challenged, there's a very real scenario where you get lured into a dick measuring contest and you get pushed to the brink.
Yeah, I mean,
if you take the proactive role where you make sure that any threat or any bullying tactic is quashed out beforehand, you're actually making the safer decision by saying, I am a madman and I double dog dare you before I even get sworn in.
But from everything I've read and what I know about Trump, and I'm pretty close, I was on The Apprentice.
Were you Omarosa?
No. That was before me.
He's officially drunk, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, shit. But anyway, he does not want to deal with any bullshit. He just likes making money. And war's bad for money. He's not going to...
War's bad for money.
It is. Unless you're financing the war.
Created
Trump's
the House
a
of
lot
Rothschild.
Smarter than we think he is. He's the fucking president.
I mean, the real thing
is... I woke up every morning, I'm like, he's the fucking president.
The most... I mean, it's really interesting, though, because, like, you know, granted, Gary didn't win. But if you just go ahead and imagine what would Gary's cabinet look like, you look at something like a Mitch, like Mitch Daniels would probably be director of the OMB, you know, in charge of, the position where you could really restructure government.
I'm surprised he was more quiet.
Who?
Mitch.
Daniels has a deal with the university that he works for that he can't be involved in politics.
Yeah.
So
that's why he did.
But I feel like him and Trump are like...
No.
He
endorsed,
really?
I mean, it wasn't an endorsement of Gary Johnson, but it was the closest thing you could do.
Really?
Oh, it was without question. It was, and in my opinion, that was an endorsement.
Right.
Like when we went up there, without question.
Yeah.
Damn.
You know, I mean, Mitch is a guy that doesn't give two craps about social issues, only cares about efficiency and
That's
cutting
exactly
the government
how
budget.
I am. I think me and Mitch should get along.
My man Mitch. My man Weiss.
You know what?
But it's
my
been
man
it's,
Western.
You know, I can't imagine necessarily a Gary cabinet, but I can imagine
right.
the type of people that he would want. And as someone in charge of the Department of Energy, Rick Perry would probably be someone Gary would look at, because this is someone who looks at its function and says, I would like to end it. That would be about as libertarian as you could pick.
And I think I think it's also Trump saying, oh, you were going to end this, so I'm just going to put you in charge of it. And if you don't, then you're going to look like a complete asshole.
Well, there's no ending the Department of Energy.
Oh,
like, people
sure?
don't realize how big the bureaucracy is. Like, you can't end the Department of Energy, because then you're saying...
Well, you can...
But it's the institution...
You can wean it dry.
It's the institution tasked with overseeing the maintenance of nuclear arms and nuclear energy in the United States. Like, if you shut it down, you have to replace it, because then the nuclear weapons will either have to be sold off...
But they're already
destroyed.
Fucked.
Right.
I mean, it isn't something... It sounds simple, but it isn't. Like, government is not simple. And
it sounds as libertarian. What you mean? You can't? We can't just let libertarians and just delete shit?
I mean, if you put in a
Todd,
paper.
Todd.
Hold on. I'm asking questions. I'm learning.
I went to say Tyler and Tad at the same time when it came out Todd.
Turd? You call me Turd?
I'm going to need you to sit back. I'm going to need you to take a break.
What have you been doing over there?
I've been taking a break, too. Right. So we'll let him finish his thought.
I was actually deep in conversation.
I know you are. We're getting ready to get into ISIS, and okay. I just don't want you to get all worked up because I know how American you are.
I don't give a shit about ISIS.
Yeah. So go ahead. Let's wrap up on the cabinet appointments.
No, I would say from the perspective of someone that views it through a framework of Gary and who Gary would appoint, he has done extremely well on his appointments to the extent of getting people passed. I don't know where you would say there's a huge... General Flynn in charge as our chief national security advisor. Mm-hmm. Anyone in the military in that position, a libertarian would cry foul.
Right.
But at the end of the day, even if Gary were president, you have to get someone through.
Yeah.
And so then Mattis, of getting someone through as Secretary of Defense, he's it.
Yeah.
I don't know how you could do better and still have the respect of the American military.
Yeah. And so this is the unsolvable, this is the unanswerable question that We Are Libertarians specifically tries to offer to the libertarian movement. Ask you, apply libertarian principles to actual governance and policy.
And if you ANCAP. Do that, that was always my contention for...
Right. Like, you can't just say, all right, I'm an ANCAP. Let's F it all.
I know. I argue with people about this all the time.
ANCAPistan, like, there will be no leaders. Well, okay, but we're in a constitutional
and
republic.
And if you don't have an ANCAPistan, it gets taken over by the United States.
And if Gary won, Bill Weld would have played a very vital role in filling out the cabinet, and he is pro-government. Yes.
He's Bush.
More pro-government than Donald Trump.
Yep.
Because he would have never allowed a Rick Perry or a Betsy DeVoe. And I would bet he would never even... Like, Judge Napolitano is someone who's seen more as a celebrity jurist than a great legal mind.
Yeah, in the last 2 years.
And I love it that that's something that... That doesn't deter Trump.
Yeah.
Because Napolitano is the perfect pick.
What is he doing?
Oh, it's a meme of Grayson Allen, Duke's top player, and Ted Cruz. And they swap faces.
They're the same person.
They do.
He's a rat! Tad, just to lean back.
I'm kidding.
And then, like,
rule five.
I Mike Lee is if the only difference that I could see, like, if Trump would have picked Mick Mulvaney, he picked for budget.
Right.
Mick Mulvaney, someone that endorsed Rand Paul, close friend of the Pauls, an absolute budget wonk, and like just all over every nickel and dime.
I don't remember the details, but the Goldman Sachs guy that he appointed, I think
Munchen, the head of the Treasury,
is. Fairly anti IMF globalist, all
he
that
is,
kind of stuff.
He is an adherent to not using our finances in order to fund these organizations that draw us into war.
Right.
Like, he has a mindset where we don't use financial weapons that end up forcing military intervention. That's sort of like the book by John Perkins, The Undercover, Confessions of an Economic Hitman.
Yeah.
He hates that the organizations that are operate under the auspices of development are really used to extract concessions in foreign policy and create long-term U.S. military expenditures. what are you laughing about?
He's just fit to be tied over there.
But yeah, like, he's a great Wilbur Ross is going to be great in Secretary of Commerce, because it's going to be about trying to, you know, every step he can in trying to grow commerce, even with outside countries, but also make getting a company started, trying to eliminate as much red tape as possible in conducting commerce. You know, Trump has said he's going to adopt for every one regulation that's passed, two have to be removed.
Right.
Getting those types of people in those roles. And we don't live in a perfect libertarian world. Gary didn't win, but when I compare him to what the kind of people Gary could have got put in, I don't see a whole lot other than his military appointments where there's a big opposition.
Yeah.
Department of Interior, appointing the congressman from Montana who's very big conservationist. You know, it would be nice to see someone that wants to auction off a lot of federal lands in that role.
Yeah.
And then as far as Pompeo as Department of Homeland Security,
politically, the guy from Montana didn't make a lot of sense. He's a former Navy SEAL, highly popular in Montana. Montana's a single congressional seat state. They've got a Senate seat up in 2018, and he was the favorite to pick up that seat and beat a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of handicapped himself with a Senate seat, by making that pick. So politically, that didn't seem to make a lot of sense to me.
No, he's like extremely passionate about conservation, and you know, Department of Interior is the perfect role to play a big role in. I guess he can't be like a full blown preservationist for like. Because he is for the Keystone Pipeline,
mm-hmm.
but he is very big on like the Big Sky National Park out in his area,
right?
And so it's going to be interesting to see the role he plays and where he ends up. Regardless, I mean, probably end up being governor of Montana and then try to springboard that to the presidency. But Pompeo's the biggest question mark for me of the cabinet appointees because he's the most pro of the surveillance apparatus in using it, but he is outspoken about not using it to collect internal data.
Right.
You know, he wants to aggressive oversight over the internal collection of U.S. citizens' bulk metadata. Mm. And he's been very critical about the NSA's facility in Utah.
Yeah.
That's basically the NSA cloud.
Right.
And so he's the only one where I think libertarians would have a really huge area of contention with thus far. Of any appointee. I think Tillerson is as good as a Secretary of State as you could pick.
He doesn't have experience in government, but not many of these people do, where I think Chu is she was Transportation Secretary for Bush, and now she's making up what role in...
So she's going to be she is going to be Secretary of Transportation under Trump. That's Mitch McConnell's wife. And
right.
But prior, she'd been Department of Labor
Bush.
Okay. And she's someone that... Department of Transportation is ideally you just shut it down. And so there'd be some contention there. And the fact that she's married to Mitch McConnell, probably
right.
There's some odd pick. That's an odd pick.
Chances that they could actually shut down something.
How do you shut down an agency? I mean, to do so, I mean, how do you do it?
How do you shut down an agency?
Well, bend over and I'll show you, Chris Spangle.
Well, like the best one would be Department of Education.
He's gone. I love it.
I'm not gone.
I've
been tweeting Shania Twain lyrics to Connors.
Go ahead, Greg.
No, I mean, the best way of shutting down a department where there wouldn't be a huge backlash and the organizations already exist to take over the authority is Department of Education, because the states already have this, authority there. And so, like, her wanting to take Department of Education and take it from best practices and research and then trying to top down implement it to charter schools is as good of an appointment as you could make as a libertarian, no matter what.
That's just a renege of power, pretty much.
Right. She's actively saying that we are going to put it, like, instead of us telling you and you have to go to these community schools, here's a voucher. No oversight. Go pick the school that's best for your kid.
There's been a ton of criticism of Linda McMahon from the WWE. And like,
unjustified.
And that, to me, is just people saying that's just the Trump derangement syndrome.
It's the trashiness of it and not like the esteemed.
Exactly. Here's a person who took a business from a small business, a small regional entertainment business, to a global phenomenon.
She turned wrestling into a billion-dollar fucking company.
More than
a billion dollars. Like, 20.
So she's
perfect.
She invents. I mean, she
shut the fuck up, ECW.
Well, they're
okay.
There's none of those around anymore.
Yeah.
All right, lean back and take a rest.
What? I'm sorry, I said ECW.
You know, she's well. So many of the people that get appointed to that role are academics that have written extensively on the role entrepreneurship plays in the economy.
Right.
And that is just the polar opposite of what you want. It's like the idea with the military. The people that are actually doing it aren't in the roles where they make a difference. Yeah, and she's
they're LARPing.
She's fought every piece of. Yeah.
Well, your cat. You just farted your cat off the table.
I Muffins likes to sleep on me. And so when I crawl into bed, I immediately, she jumps up and she lays on top of me. She laid on my ass last night and I farted and she just immediately jumped out and ran out like it was like
fire in the hole.
Like,
why
it was,
did you do that when I said LARPing?
I laughed so hard. Don't you remember like 30 seconds ago when you said me farting the cat awake or something? Like,
no, that's what you actually did. I don't laugh at real world.
Lean back. Just take a break.
Lean back.
Do you need a sandwich? Show? Need a sandwich or?
No, I'm fine. I haven't drank in hours.
All right, so I think we kind of covered the cabinet a little bit.
We were talking about WWE.
and the ECW backlash that's coming from her appointment.
Homer Sacksures.
So
the Cactus Jack delegation's going to make sure
that filibuster. That sock monkey's going to kill you.
I think it was Socko.
Whatever.
Socko. So, anyways.
But no, it's an interesting thing to cover because in the aggregate, you know, everyone's been controversial almost. But in the aggregate and restricted to purely what agency they're going to be in charge of, there's a pretty compelling case to be made that it's at least anti-everything that's been done previously.
Here's the lesson for libertarians, is anybody that we would appoint would be anti-power, anti-establishment. They would want to close down their agency. They would want to, you know, and so the way that these appointments are covered is very instructive for us. The way that Trump is covered is instructive for us. And we should be paying attention about how all of this plays out in terms of the Senate hearings and how these confirmations go, because the power structure always wants to keep itself in power. And when you appoint anti-power people, then you really have to have the will of the people behind you to get those things through. And that's why grassroots organizations are so incredibly important. So you can flood Senate offices to just really show them how powerful you are and flex your muscle. One tweet from Trump saying, call your senator because we can't get Tillerson through, and here's why he's the greatest, is going to get that through.
And he's done a really good job of anticipating the controversy and replacing it with a controversy like John Bolton's mustache.
Or walking Kanye in
and appointing Rex Tillerson Secretary of State the same day. And Washington Post is dying that no one's paying attention to Tillerson, and everybody's talking about Trump and Kanye. Yeah.
Exactly.
And that's though, like any libertarian president would have to do the same.
We're going
he's
to
playing
have
5D chess.
Yeah.
Now it's five.
it's always been one
more appointee. We're going six.
He started
we're going to the sixth realm.
He started with three, and then he went up to four.
It's been 5D chess.
By inauguration day, Tad's going to have it at 8D chess.
You wait till he swears in on the art of the deal. I will put
$100,000. Oh my God, that would
everything
be
I have. Everything I have in my meme account right now.
If he swore
$100,000 on the art of the deal
is a lot.
If he put in, if he swore. Can I be sworn in on the art of my book?
What do you mean, can he? He will be. He's got
he
it.
He totally would. So we had some...
First edition hardback.
The...
Damn right.
If you've never seen 3 Days in Paris, I believe it is called...
Is that the Woody Allen movie?
No, it is...
That's...
About that's, Charlie Hebdo. And...
Sweet Charlie.
3 Days of Terror, the Charlie Hebdo attacks on HBO, is a documentary about the attacks. There's a film company across the hall from Charlie Hebdo, where the offices were when the terrorist attack took place. So they started rolling cameras, and they have an inside look in how all of that played out. And they document how France fights terror, how they were searching for these suspects. It's a really instructive look, and... We're not paying very close attention to what's happening in Europe. And it became front page news when a security guard shot and murdered a Russian
ambassador to Turkey.
And in Berlin, there was a truck that was driven into a Christmas festival. In Brussels, there was a shooting.
Brussels was on lockdown.
There's
Zurich,
one in Switzerland.
Yep.
There's also a Russian ambassador shot.
Yeah, there was another
Russian.
In Russia. And they apparently he was caught in bed with somebody and was murdered by somebody else.
Yeah.
But, you know, you never know in Russia. So the
big cover up.
It was all coordinated. It all happened at about the same time. So it was
looking at like a 12-hour window where, you know, ISIS is getting desperate.
Mm.
You know, and so they've been publicly calling for lone wolf rogue actor attacks, specifically the bus. The bus is the one they have actually, you know, said how to do it.
Aleppo was the major battleground. It was the largest city in Syria, and for the first time today, on December 22nd, 2016, in many years, the Syrian government and Assad rolled into Aleppo and took control of the city. There was a ceasefire deal with Russia, and The Syrian rebels are backed by the United States. The Russians back the Assad government, and then ISIS is in the mix across.
They're backed
Syria.
By the Saudis and Qatar,
backed by the United States.
So, what happened in the deal with Aleppo and the ceasefire that took place this past week?
So, they were making great progress, and this was supposedly going to prevent a lot of what actually transpired. But
the assassinations,
yeah, the assassinations. Because what's been going on is the Turkey's southern border. That is the pipeline that ISIS sells all of its oil from its oil fields in northern Iraq and then, what would that be, eastern Syria. Northeastern Syria, and that's the border. And so they have knowingly allowed for money, them to sell their oil on the black market and finance all their operations. And
$1 million.
Right. And then ISIS's second largest way of making money is the drug trade, and they do a lot of that through the Philippines. And they've wrecked that country, quite frankly, as bad as you can. And there's been a crackdown in the Philippines by their president, Duterte, who is a radical madman who will kill anybody. But he has cracked down on the drug trade and really put a squeeze on their ability to sell drugs out of the Philippines to the rest of the world. But then also there's been a crackdown.
Lean back, Ted. Just take it.
I'm back.
crackdown in Turkey because of the Erdogan presidency has, you know, a coup was almost done. The United States had a role in trying to have a CIA coup Erdogan in Turkey. And then he is the legitimate and rightful leader right now. But a lot of the ceasefire has been centered around them cracking down on ISIS's ability to sell oil on the black market through the southern border. But it's among Sunnis who already see them as the rightful governance. And there has been there's been a ceasefire reached. It looks like there's going to be a way for Turkey to benefit from backing the Assad regime and cracking down on radical Islam, as long as they'll financially benefit, and Erdogan will financially benefit, and they will not join NATO, which was the big fear of Russia. And so in order for this to all be pulled off, they were essentially bought off. They will stop actively financing allowing ISIS to fund itself and abetting them and the rebels in order to topple Assad. And so we're looking at basically 10 years of being bought off before it probably destabilizes again.
Not even that.
You know,
10 years if you're lucky.
But a lot hinges on Erdogan and his people maintaining power in order to adhere to this agreement going forward.
Right.
The pipeline's coming through. You've got to be the main.
If Saudi Arabia and Qatar, you know, or Qatar, they're dangerously approaching a world that just has no time for them and their willingness to finance terrorism.
It's first one to the end is what it is. I mean, it's just who can get the oil out the quickest and who will pay us the highest dollar.
Right, but if they don't do it quickly, you're looking at it where Iran will be the largest pipeline producer in the region.
Yeah.
And when that's the case, the Saudis, I mean, when the United States opens up oil production, it's done. Everybody else is going to be done in any way. The fact that Trump's not going to restrict, you know, U.S. exploration, you're looking at a energy revolution in the United States. You know, we have always sat on our reserves and never explored them. And when we start using American companies to drill offshore for oil reserves rather than like selling the rights off to Brazilian companies and Venezuelan companies, you're going to see an absolute explosion.
Yeah.
It also flood the market. And so doing that will render Saudi will have to run right now they're running a negative for their finances, and that puts a squeeze on the princes who are already sympathetic towards ISIS.
Go check out a documentary on Netflix called Saudi Arabia Uncovered, and I don't know if you've seen it, but it's some folks smuggled cameras into Saudi Arabia, and you get a look at what it's actually like there.
It's the Islamic State.
It is the Islamic State.
Yeah,
because if you go
state-sponsored terror.
If you go and you watch on Vice News, the title of the video is "The Spread of the Caliphate: The Islamic State Part 1," and there's a series. It almost seems like it's nicer to live in the Islamic State in Syria and the northern part of Iraq, the Anbar province, than it is to live in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Like it is brutal in those dictatorships.
Oh, I mean, you're talking about they've had, what was it, back in the 90s, they had a fire in a woman's school or at a
girl.
But it wasn't a girl's school, like a, because they don't educate them. But whatever they were training them for, there was a fire, and because of whatever training they were doing, they weren't properly dressed, and they wouldn't let the women out because they weren't covered. And so they let them burn to death. And these are women between the ages of 8 and 14. Wow. And they let close to 30 women be burned to death.
Not women, girls.
No, girls. Children. Leave.
Listen, they, Jesus loves them.
Just lean back. Take a break.
But I don't know. It's the General Flynn's worldview. That's why what's all relevant is shaping up exactly.
Right.
Is... If Trump hadn't been elected, it's very real that a proxy war would have continued to been fought by Sunni Muslims and ISIS,
mm-hmm.
funded by the Sultan of Qatar and Saudi Arabian kings that were, you know, sort of rogue or princes.
The big oil money.
And Syria and Assad, until the provocation reached such a level that eventually it triggered a war between China, the United States, and Russia into an actual global world war. Whereas now, with Hillary Clinton not in office,
mm-hmm.
you have Trump, who is literally only pragmatic in this worldview and says that I'm not going to be pro Saudi Arabia or honor ties to them, and I'm not going to be pro, you know, I'm not going to be anti Iran. I'm going to be open to anything that isn't going to drag us into the next world war.
Yeah,
that's why Tillerson was such a huge appointment, because right. he's a distinguished friend of Russia and Vladimir Putin. And then at the same time, Terry Branstad, who's the governor of Iowa, has a long relationship with China, where he was just appointed ambassador.
You can't negate what he did to what he was in the oil business. Yeah. I mean, that shits all over everything
right.
in the Middle East.
Right.
I mean, the ins and outs of...
Well, so like he got the job of CEO based on how he performed in Yemen.
Absolutely. And you think your foreign policy is... just shaking hands and nodding heads.
No,
it's not. It's literally built on your energy.
Yeah, it's managing the global supply chain of oil.
And you can't pick anyone better.
He's perfect. I mean, that's the... He buys...
Largest company on earth.
And, like, you know, also we're looking at a shift where, because we're more open to Russia, now all of a sudden China feels lonely.
Mm-hmm.
Now the world looks a lot different when the United States and Russia are on good, you know, are ending a escalation. Right.
Well, there's a reason we've been moving a lot of battleships towards the South China Sea.
Well, that's the real next provocation.
Yeah.
And so
it's not the Middle East. It's the next 10 years.
It's not for right now.
China was building islands.
From the ground to the basement floor.
It's going to be in the South China Sea.
And they said that it was not for military purposes. Lo and behold, they put ballistic missiles on those islands this past week.
China's not stupid.
No, but that's why the appointment of Terry Branstad, former governor of Iowa, is so important. He has a long-standing relationship with who?
Xi Jiang, the...
the billionaire business.
Well, he's the head of China, the prime minister of China, the head of the party.
So he has a long... Hu Jintao, he has long-standing relations with, and he's appointed ambassador to China. So you're looking at people who have real personal relationships... rather than are just well-versed in the geopolitics
and
of the region.
War's bad for business. And
well, they know that. They know that. But like, what you're actually looking at is this: Japan is eventually going to have to cave on control over the South China Sea.
They're going to.
And that is, China is exhibiting its force, and there was no way to really stop it. You could prevent world war by doing what we've been doing right now and opening up relations with Russia and coordinating together in the Middle East against... common enemy. But China is very much going to try to rebuild the Silk Road.
Right.
And what they're doing is trying to create a global set of toll booths in order to control the flow of trade and also collect money for, you know, passing safely through these hostile regions.
You got to look at where their goods are going to be sold to.
Well, the United States.
It's not, and then
but
they're on out.
It's right. Not, yeah.
It's not just the United States.
But then, I mean,
we're going to give them the pleasure of doing business wherever
they are. They are, but I mean, you're looking at a total shift in that area of the world where the United States was really in charge of safe passage.
Yeah,
and we didn't necessarily ask for money; we asked for concessions militarily to build a military system and force. But now you're looking at a Chinese who want to replace us as sort of the global merchants of trade, and that's the threat rather than a Russian threat now that Trump won the presidency, the next looming crisis that could could escalate. But at the end of the day, the Chinese can't afford not to sell to the United States. And we don't.
The Chinese are also moving back.
Well, they're having an economic crisis right now.
They are.
Like they have now suspended 2 bond auctions because they've failed. And so when people aren't willing to buy Chinese debt, that should come as a huge signal that they aren't quite the economic powerhouse they think they are and continue expanding.
They
and
will
using
be moving production
financing
over the next 5 years wherever they.
It's that or devalue the currency. And if they devalue.
How many times can you do it, though?
They'll commit to do it as long as it takes. That's the thing, though, is that will rile up all the trade partners. But ISIS is now at a stage where it is of such insignificance, and the idea that they could build the Islamic State or the Caliphate right now, since there's a squeeze on their port for selling drugs through the Philippines, and now that Turkey and there's
it's
a ceasefire has been reached.
Goods.
Yeah, and I mean, they're looking like the global, like for the longest time, the gallon of oil on the global market was around $70, $60.
They were selling
it for 28.
25.
Yeah. And it's funny, is Israel was buying all of it.
Yeah, I know they were, and they were reselling it for 28.
Yeah, they were buying ISIS oil and brokering it, reselling it.
They were.
And so, you know, it's an interesting world. Like the ISIS threat hand is now, even though they wanted to be a caliphate, now they're really no different than Al Qaeda in that it's rogue acts.
They never were. Right. They just wanted.
Well, I mean, they
power
had land and, under control and not were administering
absolutely.
Systems.
That's what I'm saying. They just wanted to be recognized as a state, and we are ISIS. This is our flag.
It'll be interesting, though, because now it's one thing to attack the United States, and even though we did Abu Ghraib and the torture, waterboarding, Guantanamo, we still, in theory, subscribe to certain ideals and treatments of prisoners.
Right.
When you actively shoot a Russian ambassador...
Live on TV.
And... You threaten Chechenian disruption because they have a strong Islamic population in their southwestern province. You don't want the Soviet, or I mean, really, a guy that's from the Soviet Union and has that same mindset towards human rights. He's no different than Tiananmen Square. Like he will run you over with tanks.
He will do worse and not televise it. I mean, that's
oh no, he will. He will do it, flaunt it in your face.
Well, that,
like,
I mean,
he would
from.
Carry out the Crusades under the Russian flag,
and that's what
and
he
not,
said.
And not
he
that
the
not.
Church. He had the church come out, the Russian Orthodox Church.
Yeah, yeah. And so like it was a strategic mistake to anger Vladimir Putin. It's one thing to anger Barack Obama or George Bush,
which I knew he was a pussy.
But when you anger Vladimir Putin, that is a guy who just has no respect for human rights,
right?
And so, and he won't let the rest of the world. And now he's got global sentiment on his side. So it's not like the United Nations would come out and say, "Quit doing this. Quit committing an Islamocaust."
Forget the ham. Putin's
especially
having
when
you turkey
got Trump
for Christmas.
Saying, "No, we're going to leave the UN anyway."
Well, that's
Fuck
the thing. That's
guys.
The difference. If it's Hillary Clinton, she would get a lot of pressure from human rights organizations to speak out against
she
what
would
Vladimir
back
Putin
them anyway.
Would do.
Right.
Donald Trump will just be quiet. He won't take on champion the cause of global rights or human rights organizations, and all that's left is the Islamic State and their rogue actors in the various European countries facing a guy that would run you over with a tank and your family.
Honestly, it's like, let's let Russia deal with ISIS.
It's
why do we need to?
I love it.
Now.
Like
that's what I've been wanting so bad.
Geopolitics got really interesting.
Like when the ISIS took out a Chinese diplomat in Mali, and I thought, that's not quite big enough. Like, it's not on a global scale. That, like, but if they ever drag Putin or Hu Jintao
right
into a fight of, you know, eschatological portions about religion, they will watch how fast they just get run over.
China and Russia are fragile societies. China far more than Russia. So that's why China hasn't been in a good war lately. But Russia, you know, they're, you know, with the Chechens, I mean, there's terrorist attacks in China that happen all the time. You just don't hear about it.
Yeah.
But
the Uyghurs, you know, specifically.
Right. The Uyghurs?
Uyghurs.
Oh, okay.
We had a bunch of Uyghurs at Guantanamo
Plainfield
Bay.
High School?
No, oh, okay. No, these are like...
Wasn't it the Kid Rock?
These are the ones that Rush lost his mind over because we gave them, they were in Guantanamo, but they had like a day where they got ice cream and to swim in the ocean. And Rush just like lost his mind that we were treating terrorists that way. And then
Rush
Victor Davis Hanson did as well.
With like,
well, he's like, look at the United States. Look how terrible we treat these people.
Yeah,
and it was a video, you know, it was video showing them eating ice, giving ice cream for the day and then swimming in the ocean. And it's like, yes, if you have to be you know, permanently detained by somebody. The United States is who you want to be permanently detained by.
Yeah.
Yeah, no shit, you're still alive.
You get ice cream.
Most of these countries would drop a nuke on your
head. Tyler would buy them ice cream, they'd be lactose intolerant. But
no, I wouldn't buy them ice cream at all.
Tyler,
if anyone puts me in charge there...
On the Jeff Vibbert Christmas episode, Tad bought me ice cream.
I did. It was very thoughtful. I had no idea.
It was a very thoughtful gift. Yep.
No idea he was lactose intolerant. No idea.
Had he listened to the last episode of We Are Libertarians, he'd know because we spent 20 minutes on it.
You want to know why I don't listen? Why? I'm very hard of hearing. And I don't have anything to listen to in my house. And I'm not hooking up my TV because it drove my dogs crazy.
I'm not drunk.
I've had two beers, damn it.
He's fully woke.
And two shots of Fireball.
No. I had one shooter that was plastic, and half of it leaked out on the way in here. It had a hole in it.
Did not have a hole. Yes, it did.
Look.
What have been the big, like that's
Why are
the one
you
thing.
Judging me?
I'm not judging you. It's funny.
Like, it's been a lot of silence from, like, libertarian news outlets.
Yeah.
And libertarian, like, Gary winding things down and, like, you know, backing away from everything, and Weld just being toxic beyond belief. I feel like a lot of the libertarian news outlets and, like, libertarian Reddit, like, I go over and scavenger the...
Nothing. There's no news.
There hasn't been much news or coverage.
All you see is Jill Stein. That's what you'll see.
Yeah.
So everything in the libertarian, because it's such a small movement in terms of muscular strength, that everybody kind of closes things down. And then about January 15th, everybody wakes up and goes, oh, okay. You know, and secondly, I don't think that based on the conversation that we had, do you know how much hate mail we're going to get from people going, you said nice things about Trump. You're not allowed to do that. He has an R next to his name. And it's like when Mitch Daniels used to give a State of the State address, we as the Libertarian Party of Indiana would not give a rebuttal because there was no way for us to give a rebuttal, because when Mitch Daniels would give a State of the State address, it was libertarian in how we would approach things. What are we going to do as a third party? Go, yeah.
It's not enough.
Yeah, good idea.
I feel most libertarians like to react on what actually happens.
Right.
Instead of actually putting in policy and seeing what would happen. Because when are we ever going to actually put in policy unless we elect
someone? That's the logical next step. Is like, it's going to be tough because...
And we also have anything to bitch about right now because it's like, nobody's...
I feel like that's a big part of it. Libertarians love to bitch and there's nothing to bitch
Absolutely.
About.
Absolutely. There's nothing to bitch about on the libertarian spectrum. Oh, Trump's... Okay, he elected Flynn, whatever. Whatever. He put whoever in charge. We don't give a shit until he's actually sworn in and then the first major thing, whatever happened, or minor thing, whatever... Oh, well, shit, Gary Johnson would have fucking...
They don't really claim him. Like, there's some, you know, Gary underperforming kind of enormously based on expectations. I don't know. That went unnoticed.
4%?
No, 3.86. Or no, 3.36.
So it was almost 4. But,
I was repeatedly told I was crazy because I was like, I think it's going to be... You know, if he gets 4, he will have done well.
No, so here's how I feel about it. I don't agree that it was underperforming. I think it was massively overperforming in terms of
if you were
real
a candidate, it was.
Well, no, I think in terms of I don't think that it really matters who you had. I think if you had Austin, I think if you had John McAfee. By the way, I watched the John McAfee documentary on Showtime last night. That dude did it, and he's crazy. Like
exactly. And that's why we need him as a president.
And I don't know why he didn't.
I wrote him in.
I don't know why he didn't participate because it made him look so bad. And when you hear him talk about the neighbor murder, he seems very convincing. But
he
you walk
his
away
dog,
from.
Damn it! He broke the neck.
Hey, the neighbor poisoned his dog, so then he got murdered. I mean, the documentary makes it a very compelling case. And John McAfee,
you watch him and you know he's killed someone.
Yeah,
there isn't a question about he got set up. You watch John McAfee.
So I don't think it matters who you had in that spot to get to almost 4% and have millions upon millions of extra votes when you really have no infrastructure, no database, no way to raise money, no groundwork. No ground game. Like, to get that much extra in a cycle is extraordinary. We the idea, and I just never said it publicly just because I didn't want to be a Debbie Downer, but I thought 5% was possible. I thought the Western strategy was stupid because realistically there was no way Gary Johnson was ever going to win the presidency. And so it comes down to building up to that 5%, getting ballot access in states.
That's all this presidential run should have been about.
Rewarding the Gary Johnson campaign in 12 and 16 both did the exact opposite of what I think they should have done, which is work in libertarian-leaning states like New Hampshire, Indiana, Texas, places where you have Ohio, places where Florida, where you have strong libertarian organizations, and build infrastructure in those strong places and drive your numbers up that way and take advantage of the global stuff. Like, the Western strategy was a pipe dream. It evaporated the second Evan McMullen got in the race. And they've done it both times. They focused on states where they thought that they could get this into the election. It just was dumb. It was dumb strategy. And it didn't help benefit the party. It didn't help benefit libertarian candidates this time in any way, shape, or form. It didn't legally, apparently, supposedly, they're not allowed to give the data to the party. So the party can't use all the new contributors and names that the Gary Johnson campaign collected. But that's not new. That's never, ever happened in the history of the party. No presidential candidate has ever collected information and then given it to the LNC. Makes no sense. So, in my mind, as a political professional, somebody who has organized a state party as a career, to get to 4% was miraculous. And
especially running against a man with 99% name recognition and a woman with 99% name recognition.
Right.
That's insane.
So, I never looked at it as... I think you look at it, Greg, from a perspective of there's never going to be a better cycle, and that's absolutely true. But I also look at it on the flip side from the grassroots organizational perspective of what works in terms of growing a movement, and they didn't do any of that. And they had the Gary Johnson campaign had a mutiny about a month before the election. And half of their people threatened to quit, and some did, and it was over state directors or some level of the organization. Like, they didn't want to, or they wanted to have the ability to speak to the press on behalf of the campaign, and the campaign rightly said, no. Do you realize how much we're getting killed in the media right now? We don't want, you know, Joe Blow Schmo out there in Arkansas saying whatever he wants, and then it gets picked up by Raw Story, and then we get hammered. The communications come from the campaign.
Yeah, top down, centralized,
and people quit over that. So
that's just, I don't know. The
rumor that I have heard is that I don't know if I should say this. I don't know if I should give the inside dirt, but the rumor I've heard is that Gary Johnson previously had worked with Ron Nielsen and owed him money. And so when he ran for president, part of the deal was that he would hire Ron Nielsen to pay him back. And he did so in 2012, and he did it again in 2016. And that's why a lot of the consulting fees, there's a lot of consulting fees. I'm not against consulting fees. I'm not one of these libertarians who looks at the budget of these campaigns and says, consulting fees, blah, blah, blah. Well, consultants are the people who do all the website and graphic design and yard
free
sign
market,
ordering
baby.
And marketing. And, you know, the consultants are important, people who set strategy. You complain about having a bad strategy, and then you don't want to pay consultants for a campaign, you moron. So I don't know that that is true. All right, I have it from very reliable people
that 100%.
That was the case with Gary and Ron Nielsen, but I don't know that to be 100% true. It is the rumor from people that I trust. So, in 2008, Russ Verney ran the Bob Barr campaign, and he ran it horribly. And so you have all these people who don't understand the culture of the Libertarian Party running these campaigns. And then you don't get good results because they don't know how to operate the machinery of the party. You have thousands of people across the nation at your disposal, but you never access them. You never work with them. You never get them to work with you. And this time, the Johnson campaign actively seek to disassociate themselves from the party and their candidates, which is crazy. It is the guy in South Bend running for state house that is going to put out your yard signs for you. And every piece of material that that guy walks, and when he walks 1,000 houses, he's going to have your stuff stapled to it. You know, so there's a lot of foolishness that had happened with the back end of the campaign. So I'm surprised that it got to 4%.
Well, it got 3.28.
Right. So I look at it and I go, that is an incredible achievement for a third party to gain that many more millions of votes.
How many votes would it?
Because
they got 4.48.
Yeah, because it is so incredibly hard to win a vote as a third party. And ballot access laws in all 50 states are designed to keep libertarians from getting a vote. And here in Indiana, we have straight ticket voting, so it's incredibly lazy voting. You walk in, you push a button, you vote. I'm out for Donald Trump. You push the button, you vote for all the Republicans. Straight ticket voting makes it almost impossible for a libertarian candidate to win a race here in Indiana or in any state that it exists. In California, you have top two, which the party fought against years ago, where you have a runoff and the top two, usually two Republicans or two Democrats in a district, end up running against each other. The libertarian doesn't even get on the general ballot. So there are a lot of factors that go into all this, and the Libertarian Party has to focus on ballot access laws, and it has, to its credit. I mean, the National Committee spends an enormous amount of time on trying to change election laws, but you've got Pepsi and Coke that have written the antitrust laws for Coke for pop production, you know, and in every other industry, we see the monopolization and the movement in crony capitalism towards a smaller number of, it's like Tad said earlier, you know, there's 9 companies, you know, there's 4 media companies in the world that are, you know, above a certain, you know, CNN, Fox, they're all owned by either Time Warner or Rupert Murdoch. So they have done that with laws here in this country. So it's a very hard sell. I don't think that it's an impossible sell, but I think as president, your main function at president or at a statewide campaign level is as a marketing tool.
Right.
You are there to market. And when
you're the temporary brand ambassador with access.
Right. And to organization build. And so when you go to a place and you make a targeted state, something like Oklahoma, where you have impossible ballot access laws and you're just pissing in the wind. You go to Indiana. You go to a place that has, you know, you go to the top 10 states in terms of membership and you start organizing in those states and focusing on those states. Utah was New Mexico is a great decision. Spend time there because
he's
governor. From there. He's from there, but it's libertarian leaning. Arizona's libertarian leaning. The
Colorado.
West, Colorado, those places, we can gain a lot of traction, build some organization there.
Mm-hmm.
But
Utah was a waste once McMullen got in.
Right. So there's
FBI plant.
You know, it just.
But I mean, like Massachusetts with Weld and like the Northeast right. to me was the one that made the most sense because that's where the majority of the Never Trump movement was.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and that was the, you know, but it's tough because like last time he got 1,000,001%.
Right.
This time he gets 4.48 million and 3.28%. And, you know, I can't tell you the number of times it was that he should be included in the debates, which 15% is the threshold.
Mm-hmm.
So we're 5 times away from inclusion.
Right.
Yeah, it's insane.
But, I mean, that's something where, like, who is doing the internal polling?
Is that people just saying, oh, I can't vote for him, so I got to vote for Trump.
Well, I mean, there was internal polling, but then like the national polls, and it. I mean, I know it hasn't made you question yet whether whether the third party is a viable option.
No, it certainly does, and I've always felt that way. But to me, the benefit of a third party is not a presidential politics.
The only thing the third party has to do is get into the debates. That should be the main
benefit thing. Of a third party has never to me been, we focus on presidential politics because we're a national show.
Mm-hmm.
We focus on it because we are a national movement. But when you're asking me, does our focus as a party need to be on the presidential campaign, not beyond the marketing of it? It is about the difference that a third party makes. 70% of the legislators here in Indiana go unopposed because of gerrymandering. And so in our 92 counties, in 70% of our counties, the Libertarian Party is the second party. It is an option for city council races. It's an option for county council races. It's an option for state legislatures. Our opportunity to win as a party and to make a difference and to influence policy is at a local level.
It's ground up.
It is ground up. And, you know, the morals in Rush County saved the taxpayers millions of dollars by showing up once a month to a county council meeting with a camera and putting it on YouTube. Facebook Living will scare the crap out of your local county councilor.
It's a hell of a lot easier to get someone local elected, a Libertarian.
It's not even that. It's when the Libertarian, they think you're bigger than you are. And so when you show up and you're the Libertarian Party and you're in T-shirts and there's five of you, you know how many people go to a county council meeting?
That's five times more than what the Democrats go. Right. I guarantee you.
Literally nobody shows up but the county councilors.
Absolutely.
Or the county commissioners. And they spend millions of your dollars every year and they pass all kinds of regulations.
You
and
have
they
no idea.
They adopt things like Agenda 21 items that basically
don't
hurt
assume my agenda.
Hurt. Lean back. Just take a break.
It's, it's a joke.
You're shit posting.
Joke every once
you're shit
long.
Posting.
Your cat is sleeping.
So that
how
is
boring. This podcast has gotten.
That's where the Libertarian Party can make a difference. So if you ask, if you base the worthiness of the Libertarian Party on 3 million, on 4%, 3% in the presidential race. Fine. But you know who does that? Republicans and Democrats, because they don't want the opposition at the local level.
Mm-hmm.
So the power of the party has to be at the smallest level. You should be running for township trustee. You should be running for county commissioner. You should be running for town board. You should be running for mayor. You should be running for city council. You should not be running for state house. You should not be running for state senate. You should not be running for Congress. You should not be running for governor. You are wasting time. We are not at a point where we can make that big of an impact in those races. Now, at a certain point, the party can grow and build a farm system, but it has to start at the lower level. It has to start where you can make a difference, because you guys don't understand. When you are in a rural county in Indiana and you run against a city councilor, you have a lot of time to talk to that city councilor, and you can knock on every door in your district, and you can run a campaign that will pose libertarian solutions to county problems, to issues that people will care about if you make them care. And you know how many people walk in and go, I am so excited to vote for a county commissioner? Almost none. But if you stand outside of the 15 polling places, you get 15 people in the party and your friends and family to stand outside of a polling place and go, hey, here's Johnny, you know, vote for Johnny. You will win because you knocked on their door, you talked to them, they liked you, you're the only one who made the effort because your opponent has been in office for 75 years and has never knocked on a door because he always goes unopposed. And then you, at the poll, hand out stuff to remind them. You know, and you've made some phone calls to the 3,000 people in your district, which is totally doable to talk to each one of those people twice in a year. You can win a race. And the more county commissioner races, the more county council races, the more money we can save. It's like Rob Kendall. He can say he's the biggest tax cutter in Hendricks County history. And it's most likely true.
Mm-hmm.
And so then he can say, you know what, I can put this, I have achievements, I'm going to run for state house. You know, and then you're going to be in debates with your opponent who has been unopposed for 45 years. It's the same story in every county. There's always a $100 million project that's being proposed. No one is opposing it because nobody knows about it, and they just want to put their name on the plaque. And you can kill those projects. And then you can run and say, I have saved the county $100 million. You know, so was it a wasted opportunity? Absolutely not. Because you know how many people in 5 years are going to be around going, I heard about the Libertarian Party from Gary Johnson. I heard of it the first time when I saw this guy on CNN. I saw him get made fun of about Aleppo, and this happened. So the unprecedented amount of media, even the negative stuff, is beneficial. Look at Ron Paul. You know
nobody
how I feel.
Nobody knows Ron Paul.
Nobody knew Ron Paul until he ran for president, and then he had Gary Johnson had like twice the media that Ron Paul had in 2012.
Absolutely.
Ron Paul would have killed for the media that Gary Johnson had in his two races.
Yeah, they covered him like they did Gary Johnson. He would have been president.
So I look at it, and I can see how Republicans or Democrats would say, is this worth it? As a libertarian, I say that a lot too, because but we're not at a point where we can win the presidency for the reasons we talked about in this very episode. So we have to build a system of people and build political power to have the ability to win the presidential race. And until we do that,
we have to build.
We are wasting opportunities when we're not working together and building a network and work, and I mean that as a movement. There are opportunities for pro-Trump people and conservatives and libertarians to work together to defeat big government. We can work together and we can be effective, and we just have to stop fighting. It's stupid for the Glenn Beck people and the Alex Jones people and the Reason people and the National Review people to all hate each other.
Right.
It's just a waste of time. We're wasting time and we're wasting our efforts. And instead of, going... they said bad things about Donald Trump. Like, I'm so sick of the right and libertarians. I don't consider libertarians right. But libertarians on the right go, well, they're being mean to Donald Trump. And if Hillary had done this, then this would have happened and they wouldn't be doing this. It's like, no, stop being a victim of the establishment media, which I'm not saying mainstream media, I'm saying establishment media anymore, and start saying, this is the brilliance of Alex Jones. When you listen to Alex Jones, Alex Jones has positioned himself and his group as the truth, and they are the liars.
Us versus the world mentality.
It's us versus the world. And listening to him has reminded me of how I felt years ago. And I could be listening to establishment media kind of drifted away from this, where they're doing this to us. They're treating us this way instead of going, no, they're just wrong. Like, fake news is bullshit. I'm not going to sit here and apologize for tweeting out Sputnik, which is a website I've visited once in my life. But I'm saying, if you retweet Russia Today, apparently you are fake news. You're spreading Russian propaganda, which... you are. Russia Today is paid for by the Kremlin.
Yeah, so it's like saying BBC is propaganda.
It is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The Washington Post is basically propaganda
it's
for propaganda the United States.
It's corporate America that pays for its advertisements.
Exactly right. So everything is propaganda. Everything is up for review.
You have to know who you're reading and decipher it.
And you have to stand up for your side. And you have to say, we are a side, and we're not going to apologize for being libertarians. I'm not going to apologize for running We Are Libertarians and giving out viewpoints that people don't like. If you don't like,
put in the name We Are Libertarians, people know what it is, and
right?
You stand up for what you believe in. So, and that's what people have to do.
Exactly right.
Except that they say, no, you're not.
Yeah. No, you're not. You like Donald Trump,
yeah. Right?
Yeah.
So I know I went on a tirade, but I just think people need to have the right perspective about the Libertarian Party, because the Libertarian Party, in my mind, it is about winning elections, but you also have to be realistic. You're not going to win the presidential election, so if it's not about winning, what are the specific goals for that specific office? And as a party, what are the specific goals? And frankly, let's say Donald Trump is a libertarian. Let's say that Donald Trump is the most libertarian president that has ever existed, and I am a Libertarian Party member. I am the Libertarian Party guy. I have earned a paycheck from the Libertarian Party.
You're still not going to be pleased.
And I will still go, because I'm open-minded, I will go, I recognize that he is libertarian, and I'm glad about it.
Yeah.
You know, I am glad Rand Paul and Justin Amash and Thomas Massey exist. I am glad that they are working on libertarian ideas in a different party.
Your thinking's evolved on that.
No, it hasn't, because I look at Ron Paul specifically, and to a lesser degree, Rand Paul, as Rand Paul's just kind of impure and annoying.
So, like, there's something about Rand you really just—it's at a visceral level of disgust.
Irritates me, like. And the Libertarian Party people are like, we need Rand Paul to run against Donald Trump. But I'm like, he didn't beat him in the primary. He got whooped, his ass whooped. Why would we want to run a loser again? So, like,
Spangle becomes Trump.
You're a loser.
Like, he's an enormous loser. He doesn't belong on the same
don't
stage.
Sit down.
I'm done.
Rand Go Paul ask is your a dad for advice.
Look at that face. Who would vote for a face like that?
Ron Paul, to me, is... Ron, I greatly respect Ron Paul, and don't get me wrong, I respect Rand Paul, and I am glad that he is there being the opposition on people like John Bolton. Like, that is a great move. The filibuster, you know, the political capital in the filibuster has worn out, but that was a great move. The thing with Ron Paul, in my mind, is that Ron is... He is deified. It's not Ron that I have the issue with. It is that you can never say anything bad about Ron Paul.
Bullshit.
It's his people. And if you don't believe me, say something negative about Ron Paul on your Facebook page. You will be attacked. Stephen Horowitz from Bleeding Heart Libertarian went through that this week, where he posted something about Ron Paul getting the electoral vote. And he said something slightly negative about Ron Paul, and it turned into a great, huge thing.
Well, that's like the most libertarian story I can remember of the week.
His water filters are shit. They're not up to fucking Alex Jones levels.
Yeah, I mean, Ron Paul is an opportunist. Ron Paul takes advantage of his position, and I don't blame him because I would do the same thing. You know, and there's an arrogance and a smugness about the Ron Paul, Lou Rockwell, anarcho-capitalist, Misesian tribe. Where they believe that they are libertarianism, and that right libertarianism and anarcho-capitalism, it's like anarcho-capitalists are dicks to us because we're constitutional Republicans. Roger Paxton, I love, I endorse his podcast for the Lava Flow. Anarcho-capitalist, we're constitutional Republicans, thinks we're heretics, loves Ron Paul. Ron Paul's the man. Well, dude.
Lifelong Republican.
Lifelong Republican and constitutional Republican. Small r. Like, there's this cognitive dissonance that anarcho-capitalists have about Ron Paul, and that they just, you know, because he's secretly one of them.
He's the man.
But the dude was collecting a government paycheck for most of his life.
He never cashed them.
So,
he returned them to the people.
So, I don't dislike Ron Paul. I just think that he is... I hate... cults of personality.
Yeah, when a movement gets completely tied to it.
Exactly. I only want there to
be one. I mean, that was the real danger, too.
There must be only one cult of personality.
The leader.
That's right.
Everyone else has to be physically removed.
But
right.
Listen, Ron warned us.
He did.
Well, I mean, that's
happening.
That's
too
that's,
late.
That's what I was. There was. I don't know. I am. The biggest libertarian news story, I guess I forgot, was that he got an electoral vote.
Yeah.
And then there was. An LPIN member was upset that it was said former Republican Party member or whatever Ron Paul got one electoral vote, and it's like, you know, he's been a lifelong Libertarian Party member or whatever,
right?
And got their, you know, panties in a bunch. And I just thought, it is just the damnedest thing in the world that it doesn't matter. Like, it matters more how they're identified rather than that they are an anti-authoritarian. Right. I mean. Their label doesn't matter. They're just against, you know, they stand for every principle we do.
Right.
But who gets to claim them turned into over a holy war between people that are arguably on the same side.
Yeah. Like, I'm just, like, to be quite honest, and this is just a warning, listeners, and I think you know this about this podcast, and that's why most people like this podcast versus other libertarian podcasts. We're not trying to preach to the black and yellows. You know, I just don't have the stomach to be part of the crowd, of any crowd. Like, I just am not built that way. And trust me, there is huge parts of me that hates that even in my own circle, I am the outcast half the time. Like, it's, I just look at it and I go, you know what? I'd rather tell the truth than be liked by everybody.
Yeah.
And tell my point of view than to be liked by everybody. And that's what we do here, and that's what we're building. We're building an enclave of independent thinkers. The truth is that the world is bigger than the libertarian movement, and the politics are harder than what we read on our small-minded libertarian media outlets. And if you're going to sit there and we're going to this podcast never is going to get into the drama of Adam Kokesh versus Austin Peterson versus Charles Perallo, because nobody knows who they are and nobody gives a fuck. And that's tabloid bullshit, and it doesn't. People don't care. People want education, and they want to know what's going on, and they want to understand the news. And libertarian media does a very poor job of doing that, and that's why most of these sites fail within 6 months to 2 years. Like, it's just. For us to last 5 years, it's because we don't waste our time on the circle jerk bullshit of what did Charles Perallo say about Austin Peterson? Like,
who are they?
You know, or starting off a podcast with, hey Greg, how's your week?
It was good.
Cool. So
in the Fed.
Hey,
I went to Pork Fest this week.
Oh, don't get me started. I had an explosion against the Free Street Project today.
You leave that New Hampshire out of this.
Oh, that, I triggered Harry.
I know.
I've decided that the Free State Project now is just, it's completely LARPers.
Is my mic still cut? All there,
no, you're on.
All it is, oh, okay. is live action role playing for Liberty. It has absolutely
dude,
I
was dying.
Oh, Harry was so pissed.
I don't believe in that project that it is anything other than Liberty Camp for like the crazy Christian kids that went away in the summer. Like, I don't think it has any purpose, any effect, any. I just am at the point where I don't respect it at all.
It's LRP. It's Liberty Roleplay.
Yeah.
It's. Like, Adam Kokesh was at a club here in Indy called the Antelope Club.
Yeah.
It's kind of our clubhouse, and it's a bar, it's a meeting room, it's a great place. If you're in Indianapolis, check out the Antelope Club. Our good friend, libertarian Brad Kloffenstein, runs it. It's where all our meetings are. And I was there for a fundraiser for a friend. He was having an organ transplant, and Adam Kokesh was upstairs. And I could have gone up and met Adam Kokesh, and I didn't, because I don't give a shit, you know? And Adam kept, like, what am I going to do, you know? Like, it just, what am I going to go up and suck his dick? Like,
I would.
I don't care. Like, and there's so many people who just, I just really want Tom Woods to like me. Well, Tom Woods, at least, he knows who we are.
I like Tom Woods.
I love Tom Woods.
Yeah.
I
recommend his podcast if you're a little bit more serious than we are. Like, you know, if you want even more substance, that's your guy.
If you want if you want to know a wide-ranging view of libertarian philosophy, Tom Woods is your man.
Oh, I like him as a person. He's entertaining. He does what he does exceptionally well.
He's a good guy.
And it's why we recommend Tom Woods. It's why we recommend the Johnny Rocket Launchpad.
Jason Stapleton, fantastic.
It's why we recommend, you know, Jason does daily talk radio from a libertarian perspective. He's kind of picked up a little bit where Ben Swan left off. We recommend the Lava Flow with Roger Paxton, because Roger is a free stater. Roger is somebody who
a LARPer.
He's living in Keene, and he is an anarchist, and he thinks we're traitors. But that's okay.
Because
I love Roger. I love his podcast. I learn a shit ton from it, and it's very professionally done. And
of all the LARPers, he is the best of the LARPers.
He fooled me.
You know, on Lions of Liberty, those guys.
I love those guys.
Like, Mark and the guys over there, they interview a bunch of libertarian insiders. Sort of like kind of Johnny does the same, but Johnny's so overproduced. Like, not overproduced because that has a negative connotation. Like, the first time I heard Johnny Rocket Launchpad, I like wanted to give up because I was like, this is so good.
You're trying too hard. There's no way there's a libertarian.
It's so professional. We just should give up. Like, you know, we recommend these people not because, partly because of our own shortcomings. Like, we're interested in what we do.
Yeah.
We're interested in applying libertarian worldview to modern politics and geopolitics. And we're not interested in interviewing a scholar from the Mises Institute. Like, there's other people who do that and are into it and do it well, like Mark and Johnny and Tom Woods. Like, they do great work. So why reinvent the wheel? So I've just ranted for like 30 minutes, but I've got a lot to say.
I know that there was the results of that LPIN put out in their newsletter, the results of like national libertarian election results. And I just had gotten messages from people that were just really disappointed, that were like totally different expectations, but they're very new people. And so yeah. I just was like, you know, tempering their expectations.
It's about having a different perspective.
Right. I was like, you got to remember too, it's the Libertarian Party's perception is much larger than its numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are a lot of people who are libertarian that aren't Libertarian Party members. Like, that, it just dwarfs the number of actual party members there
you
are.
You also right. get the independent
right.
percentage.
Well, that, yeah, I mean, and, like, there are a lot of, you know, you don't, it doesn't happen overnight. And, you know, this is an election where, because of the dynamics of it, the expectations were enormous. You know, it just couldn't have been higher because of the hated two candidates of the major parties.
Well, those are sort of expectations, I think, that were forced upon
they were.
The candidate, and not necessarily something that Gary Johnson didn't
no.
promise victory.
No, but it was like that perfect, it was that Onion right. headline, like, I'm so sorry, I disappointed myself.
Right.
The best one was, when's the election?
Yeah. Yeah.
The
like, he just never anticipated this being the narrative that developed.
A lot of this happened on the left too. Like,
oh.
the disappointment. There are people who have unsubscribed to this podcast since Election Day because we are not catering to their hurt feelings over the election that Donald Trump won. And instead, we have taken the approach of, here's why Donald Trump won, and here's what to expect, and let's wait and see. As opposed to, Donald Trump is the Antichrist, blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm sorry, that's just not how – I'm not going to sit here and bash Donald Trump for every single thing that he does, because that is
for
so
– being a winner?
So tiresome. Like, when
well,
he,
we have never done that with anybody.
He's not even president yet.
Like, we didn't do that with Barack Obama.
Right.
You know, we didn't do it with – you know, I have a Biden affinity.
You have a Biden boner.
I do. I like Joe Biden. Like, I like him personally. I think he is – we have a slightly different view of the world, but I think he is
ultimate
as
statesman.
Honest as he can.
Tad, he would fuck Joe Biden in the butt.
I know he would.
He well, could creep on me all day.
I think you'd take it. I think actually you'd be a catcher for Joe.
Who, me?
No, him, not you.
I don't
you.
Know Joe Biden.
You're very masculine.
From what I know, he's tall and gray.
If you watch the circus, that episode with Biden was so good.
Oh, it was.
Love Joe.
He's a good dude.
I even like Barack Obama.
Me too. Like, I don't like Hillary Clinton is the one person, like, there
just
isn't anything I can say nice about her, because she didn't try. Biden nailed it this week when he said, I don't think she ever figured out why she ran.
Yeah, well,
because
she thought,
she's a woman, and she thought she was obligated for the presidency.
All right, well, that may be a little mansplaining.
Yes, it is, because I am a man. Am I explaining shit? So you can define this however you want.
No,
she thought she deserved.
She, yeah, exactly. She was entitled, and so the left set all these people up for disappointment.
Yeah,
and made this an apocalyptic election that if Donald Trump won, then the end of the world was going to happen, and then all of a sudden everybody's crying because they think the end of the world's happening.
But you're also
forgetting. It's irresponsible. It's wrong. It's not the way that the parties and the candidates should position their campaigns and the other campaign. Nothing in American politics is apocalyptic.
But
nothing is I mean, there is incremental destruction of our constitutional republic, as we have documented the past month. But nothing is the end of the Republican. We survived Andrew Jackson when we were a much less strong. We were much more fragile as a nation during Monroe and Jackson and John Quincy Adams and Abraham Lincoln and Andrew Jackson than we are now.
Mm-hmm.
So calm down. Like, stop crying. And I'm sorry that I'm not patting you on the back telling you that it's – I'm telling you it's going to be okay, but stop being a pussy.
Mm-hmm.
The people who are bitching, though, are bitching about the Bernie situation within
right.
the DNC, which is
which
private,
they should.
Which is a private organization, which they need to learn what
They just they don't respect the popular will at any point.
No,
like, it is that the popular will should
be
suspended.
She was completely cheating to get.
She was, but it's that organization is something she's been a part of.
My selected. My free speech doesn't stop because you're offended.
Absolutely not. It's two different arguments within the same spectrum. There is what people don't understand. The Bernie people are pissed off because Bernie didn't get elected, but they're mad at Trump because he won.
Right.
You should be mad at Hillary, like not Trump for winning.
The people who are all upset about, you know, fake news, those people are just, like,
Democrats are cheating there?
So many of my liberal friends on Facebook, I just go, I thought you were smarter than this. I thought you were tougher than this.
No,
it's complete.
Team sport.
Exactly.
Ultimately, like, it's always going to be, like, there are just people that are leftist, and there are just everyone, like, you know, libertarians and constitutional Republicans and even neocons, that they are just going, like, it's collectivist versus anti-collectivist.
It's way easier to blame the other side.
Right, and, like, that, the final, yeah, there's Bittner and anti-Bittner.
Who's
and
that?
And we are firmly anti-Bittner.
Is that Shat Shittner?
No, it's Lil Brett Bittner.
And, like, that's the coming war, though, that's going to be interesting, is that if Trump's probably, by being nationalist, he wins re-election unanimously. And the thing is, they have, by becoming, you know,
who
jokingly,
are you running?
The Black Lives Matter Socialist Party of America, they have just completely hollowed out their voter base.
I don't give a shit about party politics anymore. And I guess this is my warning. I am a Libertarian Party person. I will be active in party politics. I'm going to serve in an official capacity. And what we say here does not necessarily, those are not the opinions of the Libertarian Party. I just have a lot of knowledge based on my professional history with them that I know that I can be of service over the next year or two to the party and help rebuild the infrastructure of our state organization.
It should be locally.
But I will tell you, I'm just over, I want freedom and liberty, and I want less government intervention in economics, our personal lives, and overseas. I don't want war. I want monetary policy fixed and sane. I want the American dream to be rebuilt. I don't want people like I don't want the Big Short to happen to us. I'm going to take liberty and freedom where I can get it. And if Donald Trump is going to offer that to us, or if Hillary Clinton is going to offer that to us, or if Gary Johnson or Jill Stein is going to offer, I'm going to support them in the positions that will help us get more freedom and liberty.
As you should.
Because in terms of my philosophy, I know what I want out of my life. I don't want to be controlled anymore. I don't want people telling me what I can and can't say to my friends on a public or a private forum. I don't want a social credit score. I don't want licensed journalists. I don't want cops killing black citizens because of drug laws. I don't want American bombs killing innocent children in Aleppo. I don't want these things. And if Donald Trump is going to do things that are going to help make people's lives more free and less and death less imminent, then I'm going to be okay with that. And when he doesn't do that, I'm going to criticize him.
Absolutely.
But if I say that Mattis is a smarter choice than whomever Hillary Clinton was going to choose, that does not mean that I buy wholesale Donald Trump. That doesn't mean that I am a Republican at this point. Like, or ever. You know, I'm just so fed up with the binary bullshit. Because if you say a bad thing about Hillary Clinton on Facebook, you're a Republican. If you say a bad thing about Donald Trump, you're a Democrat. If you say a nice thing, like, everybody's trying to fit you into a box, and I'm just, like, since the election, I have been called every name under the sun. I've been called a racist. I've been called a liberal. I've been called a conservative. I've been called, you know, you're just attached to your white male privilege. You're a Russian spy.
Yeah. Like, a sophisticated Russian propagandist.
I'm just exhausted by it all. And so I've turned off, when I post, I've turned off the comments.
Yeah.
I just say what I want to say and I walk away. And maybe I'll go back and graze them, because people in the public sphere are so busy trying to force everybody into a label so that they can identify whether you're on their team or not. It's exhausting. And so I'm for getting us back to a constitutional republic, because that would be a start.
Oh my God. That'd be almost a, you know, that'd be a Copernican shift from where we are right now. I'd be a revolution.
I'm not an anarchist because I don't know that it's possible. It's certainly not possible in my lifetime.
And it doesn't mean I'm against you right now.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm every bit, like, it's them who are against us. Like, because we are not at the same destination, that seems to be everybody.
Right.
If you are not at the same destination, then I cannot dare be your ally on the journey there.
Absolutely.
And it's crazy, because there's no point in bickering and fighting over
it. It's myopic and obtuse. Like,
exactly.
Like, everything that Roger Paxton says is exactly right. I agree with Roger Paxton 100% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to say the things that Roger Paxton says as an anarcho-capitalist,
mm-hmm.
but I can't, because that's not how I'm built. I don't believe that those things are possible in the next 50 years that I have left.
Right, and it's not like I'm trying to prevent them.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not like if they're like, well, we're going to pass this anarcho-capitalist law, that I'm going to stand up and say, absolutely
no.
not. That
right.
I'm a constitutional Republican, and I will not accept any anarcho-capitalism
yeah.
at all.
So,
like, you know, like, I'm on your side. Like, we're not opposition until we get to the point where we're talking about whether we should, you know, private auction off the court system for privatization to, you know, third-party vendors.
So we just got to manage expectations at every level of the political process. Hi, honey.
Meow.
Mittens came to give me a kiss. So, I'm tired, and we've done over three hours.
Yeah. I was going to say, if anyone listens this far...
Oh, they do.
Then guess what? They're going to get the Tad Western experience...
Well,
for free on my website, tadwestern.edu.
It's like Trump University.
All you got to do is type in the promo code TADWESTERNWAL2016. Christmas experience. Christmas. Christmas.
You come down the chimney.
We're
going to
say it. We're going to say Christmas. Because the other radio stations won't say it.
Say happy holidays.
They're going to say holidays.
I made your cousin Aaron mad. You know,
good.
Aaron Ewert.
Forget him.
And so Aaron, I said, man, I had to cut Tad's mic. He won't stop talking. It's like Aaron's here. Oh, and he's so triggered right now.
Oh, yeah. You got me, too. I'm not going to lie.
You're like the FCC the of
thing
the
is,
Ewerts and the
you put the Trump the book right next to where the lights are, so I couldn't see if I was actually rolling or not.
Oh, you were? Yeah.
Yeah. I know.
I
haven't been that bad tonight.
No. I haven't cut you off. I never cut anybody off. I do it as a joke. I did lower you a little bit.
I may be talking it while other people are
so an hour ago when you were real sloshed, I had you kind of down, so if you were talking over Greg, then you were talking under Greg.
Wait a minute, that was when we were talking about Aleppo, and I know Syrians.
I get serious about Syrians.
Yeah. If there's anything I get serious about, it's Syrians.
Make no mistake, Tad Western.
Nobody Listen, knows Syria. Like
quite like Tad Western.
And you'll learn that at tadwestern.edu.
Your real name is Tyler Weiss.
No, it's not.
How did you come up with the name Tad Western?
Well, I was drunk one night. And I was on Facebook, and I was like, you know what would be a sweet porn name? Tad. The Hanging Chad Western. No one ever asked my middle name.
Hanging Chad.
Yeah, the Hanging Chad. And that's ode, to the 2000 election.
Tad Hanging Chad Western. Yeah. By God. You need an updated profile pic of you as a cowboy.
I know.
Really
just
do.
A nutsack swinging. You know.
Something with John Wayne.
I don't... Well, I've got... Some lady blocked me on Bumble last night.
Because your name was Tad Western?
No, I asked her. I said, hey, is that your dog? She goes, no. I was like, ah... And she had a picture, and it was next to a giant Caterpillar dump truck. And I said, is that your dump truck? And she goes, no. Why do you think that's mine? I was like, I don't know. Why are you uppity? Do you really think I'm a cowboy? Because my picture is a cowboy.
Sweet talking the
and
ladies.
And that was the last thing I heard. I was like, well, you're not coming over and washing my dishes.
She's not going to get the promo code to tadwestern.edu.
Congratulations to Greg Lenz. You're on Bumble now.
Apparently. Actually, no. Francis reported it.
Oh, okay.
Because she goes, I swear to God, she told me that she had seen me on Bumble at the Christmas party.
That's yeah. hilarious. No,
and I go, I promised to God. Yeah, Mel had seen me, too. And
Mel
I'm like,
had seen you
God,
during not... a previous administration, and she was like, is everything okay with them? I was yeah. like, hell if I know. Greg doesn't tell me anything.
No, or like, it was just like, I don't know. I'd never signed up, and so then I had messaged them about it that time, and then it came back up. And so then Francis, this comes up, and Francis is like, you're on there.
Yeah.
And I go, no.
That was an epic screenshot.
And I go, I swear to God, I'm not on Bumble. And then she sends it to me, and she reported it as fake. So I was like,
you
this
know how
is...
many honeys you're missing out on?
Well, if that's happening, I'm going to be really upset.
Oh, you're yeah. James Neese made an OkCupid profile of me like 6 years ago.
Oh, I remember that.
And I have to ask him to find it because apparently I'm doing real well. Like you know what I'm going to do? I'm on all these dating sites except my Tinder's broken. I can't get Tinder to work for some reason. I'm going to have James Neese write my profile.
Yes.
So, cause
what's up? I'm a shitlord, Sith Lord.
I don't ever get
seventh
on
degree.
I don't ever get on the dating apps because they don't really work for me because I'm a personality catch. And so
that's what your cats tell you.
Oh man, I'm on vacation right now. I've been on break for like a week now. And I have done shit. I have burned a rick and a half of wood in my fireplace, and I have sat in my chair and read. And
I have recalibrated. Have you Lou read?
And I have watched all documentaries.
Oh, you're full woke.
I'm so woke. Yeah. I'm.
Have you finally realized that World War II was a lie?
Tyler,
he's not quite there.
Tyler's with me. He just sits at home and watches.
No,
documentaries.
I watch Nazi docs on Fleek every time. I get home at 5 o'clock from 5 to 11 o'clock at night, 6 hours a day. I watch Nazi documentaries.
I know, and there's one on Hulu that I just found that is.
Did you know they have a base in Antarctica?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Have you watched Einzelgruppen yet on Netflix?
Have I watched it? Are you kidding me?
Call me Tad Einzelgruppen Western.
Don't you tell me. Have I seen it? No. So, yeah. Follow my Twitter. Chris,
he just Nazi judged you.
At Chris Spangle. If you want to watch the documentaries I'm watching, I usually tweet. And there was a movie on Netflix. Man, I am chatty as hell tonight. It's just I've been alone in this apartment for like a week, and I'm like, people are here, so I'm like, hey, everybody, let's talk.
Hey, Greg. Hey, I did not see that coming.
The Siege, it's a Netflix movie, and it's The Siege of Jalalabad or something. It's like some, it's
Jalalabad? Is it the...
The UN
documentary?
Yeah, the UN's it's a movie, and the UN sends Irish troops in the Congo to fight, and the UN F's it all up, and basically it is like you feel like if you ever want to understand the gaslighting of the globalist system and the mindset of the globalist system, you're sitting here watching these brave troops fight, and then at the end there's a statement of he just doesn't understand how the world works, and it is so maddening. And you go, oh, we're just being gaslit by internationalists, like the people who run the UN and the World Bank and all these major multinational corporations.
Who's ever invested?
They're really just gaslighting us.
They
yeah, exactly. No, I named specific theys.
Jews.
I'm talking about you. Like, that's the thing.
Right.
Is everyone's afraid to admit who they is.
Right.
And it's...
It's George Soros.
Yeah.
It's the IMF.
Marvelous.
It's the World Bank. Like, they
who
are
they?
They.
Who are the Federal Reserve?
Right. And it's the people... It's
the Rothschilds.
It's the people like Hillary Clinton who have a certain way of thinking. They go on the Sunday shows. They're all, oh, Kissinger is great. You know, and meanwhile, the Kissinger is the architect of death. You know, and
why does everyone kiss his ass?
Because
I would never. Because
he was.
He's got stockpiles of them involved in cheese pizza, probably.
Oh, we're coming around 3 hours deep.
He just
believes in cheese pizza.
He just dropped the mic and walked away.
No, it is funny though. It's always
he's woke.
Whenever you get to that point, no matter who you're with, when you get to the IMF, when you get to the elite global power,
the Federal Reserve,
everyone runs the other way from saying who it is, and I do it too.
Yeah.
But it's like, ooh.
Tad will name the Jew.
God. That's not who I was talking about, but apparently that's who he was talking about. I don't know if anybody can hear that, but
no.
No, it's not the Jews, Tad. It's people who believe in an international system and a lack of national sovereignty, and that everybody is we don't know that the man who shot the Russian ambassador was a Muslim terrorist. Meanwhile, the dick was screaming Allahu Akbar as
remember
he did
Aleppo, which was underhanded at Gary, and that's a shitty thing to do. When a terrorist specifically remembers to call you out because you asked what is Aleppo, you know Gary should have issued a statement.
The worst thing I've done this week is my 3-year-old niece is in town. She's adorable and sweet. Love her to death, and she and I were playing peekaboo, and she was hiding under the blanket, lifting it up and saying peekaboo, and it looked like a burka. And I said,
"That's pretty funny."
And I said, "Instead of saying peekaboo, I want you to say Allah Akbar." And so she goes, "Allah Akbar,
oh,
Allah
my
Akbar."
God.
And I go, "Go do it to your mommy and daddy." And she walks to the kitchen and she lifts it up and she goes, "Allah Akbar," and they go, "Chris!"
That's a great, great troll.
I lost
it. And
you
said, what? Are you?
They are Bernie. They're Bernietarians. They're in Boston, Massachusetts. They're surrounded by it. And I had her, I go whisper in her ear, I go tell mommy Donald Trump's awesome. She walks up and she goes, "Donald Trump's awesome!" And my sister lost it. She goes, "You could get us killed in Boston if you..." She's very dramatic. You think I'm dramatic?
I don't think you're dramatic.
Oh.
I do.
Yeah. You take Jeff and Caitlin drama and double it.
Caitlin. Oh, Caitlin and
good,
Jeffrey.
Good old Caitlin and Jeff.
Caitlin, Mike Tyson.
Well.
Iron Caitlin Kopetsky.
I wish we could explain.
Maybe next
if you
time,
don't make a meme of that right now.
Invite Ted back on.
We have to end so Greg can make a meme.
Oh my God.
I wish our chats could be public.
All right. But it's Christmas. Merry Christmas to everybody.
Thank you for the gift. It's
Happy
very
holidays
thoughtful.
Yes, thank
all
you
atheists.
Thank you for the gifts. I cannot wait to get woke tonight before I go to bed.
My teeth feel very clean.
Do they?
It is. I don't necessarily like. I wish they made toothpaste in different flavors. Like there was a cinnamon,
like meat flavor.
Yeah, that'd be great if I could get a hamburger flavor.
honey baked toothpaste.
But it was like a minty cinnamon, and I was just like, this is not what I'm looking for. Like, give me like lemon, or I just like the overwhelming mint. I have never liked it since I was a kid. But this has a nice mint flavor.
Super blue.
That is great. Yeah, it comes out white, but then it oxidizes and turns blue. It's fascinating.
Are you shitting me?
Oh. It's
like the taste turns blue?
Because it's iodine.
That's even worse. Iodine turns your shit yellow.
Oh, I'm so looking
forward to this. It's iron oxide, man. I think you got ripped off by somebody impersonating Alex Jones, because he would never sell that shit.
He
only sells the good stuff.
It is an expensive toothpaste, that is
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, you got ripped big time.
No, but I found the mint flavor to be delightful. It wasn't as
minty?
It wasn't as minty, like Crest has as blah. This has a nice natural taste to it, so.
Yeah. And I'll be more of a free thinker.
Recommended by
sticker.
Alex Jones and Chris Spangle. So that's
and my brother. My brother digs that shit.
Which Jeremy? What's his name?
Yeah, Jeremy Western.
Yeah, Jeremy Western.
There's only one Ted Western. There's multiple Weeses.
Jeremy Western.
Jeremy Western.
What's his middle name?
Jeremy Allen Western.
He doesn't have a cool middle name.
So your brother's into like tea tree oils and alchemy.
Well, yeah, no, he's dating a Shaka right now. An Indian guru.
A what?
A chakra.
A chakra?
She's a lovely Indian girl, and he's
she's an Indian guru.
He's being incredibly racist.
Did she write the autobiography of a yogi?
Okay.
Who's yogi? I don't know.
Potentially.
Well, before our careers end, before they even start, let's end this podcast.
Yes.
Final thoughts for the episode. Tyler,
Tad, Hanging Chad, Western.
Well, I'd like to thank everyone for coming out to this wonderful WAL
holiday
Christmas party.
Holiday,
whatever you celebrate this time of year.
No, we say Merry Christmas in this household.
Oh, yeah, that's right. No one showed up but me, so.
That's true.
I think it has something to do with us censoring guests.
Congratulations, listeners. That's more airtime for me. I know that's all you wanted for. Aaron
wanted to, but he wasn't allowed.
Yeah, he was kind of. He's in the doghouse, you know.
Uh oh.
Well, he should be.
I'm not going to speak on why.
I'm on.
Because he was a bad boy.
I was a bad puppy.
I'm on the side of the doghouse. But no, I had a good time. Appreciate you having me out, and appreciate you giving
Happy
me
Hanukkah
my gifts back.
Happy Hanukkah, Ted.
Do you have any gift left?
Yes, I have.
Oh yeah, he's got four gifts left.
Listen, you think I'm shit faced over here? I'm not even half hammered.
It's not his first rodeo.
I like that his definition of hammered is exactly six beers. He's had two, so he's not half hammered. Yeah.
Those are like 9% alcohol.
They
I'm not going to
drink. Like drinking, so two's the equivalent of drinking four.
Oh, yeah, that's the equivalent of Tad Western coffee.
There's a Tad Western coffee?
Yeah.
Can I buy it? Do you sell it?
No, I make them.
Do I need a promo code?
They're homebrews.
Okay.
Do you have a Keurig? I'll get you.
You know how to do that?
I'll get you a K-Cup.
My God.
What's a Tad Western. EU.
Try again.
K-Cups. Try again.
This is the greatest.
I forgot what my university was.
Nobody should be listening to this.
Tadwestern.edu. I have K-Cups for sale. Not for profit. All the profits go to.
What if I buy a K-Cup in triplicate?
What?
If I buy a K-Cup in triplicate, is there a discount? Like
triplicate.
Triplicate.
Why would you triplicate it?
If I buy three K-Cups.
That's like triple duplicate.
Do I get it 3/5 off?
Yeah, you can.
Found a way to turn it right.
Yeah, why is he going to be 3/5?
All of a sudden, I'm looking at Mike Tyson and I went, right 5th.
Iron cake. Anywho, yes, I do like, I do make special coffees in the morning.
Yeah.
It's the only thing that gets me out of bed.
Diesels?
See, what you guys have to understand about Tad Western is that you have that, so you're all about to go to home for the holidays.
I'm a half truth and I'm a full lie.
So you have that uncle that has never been married and he loves to drink and he loves the pull my finger joke and he loves to say racist shit and he loves Donald Trump and he's like 70, 65, 70 years old or maybe he's in his 50s. You know, everybody's got that uncle, that baby boomer uncle. Tad is that guy in his 30s. Are you in your 30s yet? Are you?
No. I'm young. And it's not that I even like Donald Trump. It's if you like Donald Trump, then I'll like the exact opposite thing that you like. Like I just...
He's just contrary.
He's just an asshole.
Yeah. No,
see what I
just
mean?
Like, but the thing is, I know everything about what you like, so I can just...
Jedi mind trick you.
Yeah. I can... Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you like that?
Yeah, you
I
like
don't,
that.
Idiot.
Yeah, this makes...
love Bernie.
This makes for a good podcast. Oh, yeah? Yeah. Well, so, I don't, so...
How do you feel about ending the Fed?
Yeah, yeah, you know what the Fed does? They melt down gold bars and give it to Canada.
To the globalists.
Yeah. And then you're going to say, no, they don't. I'm like, yeah, they do. I've seen the document.
He just made me
and like, Tad, you're drunk. I'm like, no, it's 9:30. They don't sell beer on Sundays.
So who is the drunk uncle in your family? Because I can't imagine.
There isn't one.
Not in your, I mean in Tad's because.
Oh, no. No, I actually.
When you go to family Christmas or family Thanksgiving, because you and Aaron.
We all despise getting together. There's literally four of us. Five of us that actually talk year round.
Yeah, because like Larry, Daniel. You.
They're married. They're not even blood.
But I'm saying, like, this group of guys, you're all nuts.
Absolutely, but we are all nuts. The thing is, we all know each other. We were all, like, in a youth group together.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we were all raised together somehow because we all went to the same church.
None of it took
for any
of them.
And then somehow we all became related.
And degenerates.
Well, we realized it was all a big scam. But anywho.
For your mind.
So anyway, yeah.
Free your mind.
Am I about to mind freak you, Chris Spangle?
Yes. You maybe darken that up a little bit.
I didn't know how much to.
No, that's appropriation.
So, anywho. But you get together. There's got to be.
I have an uncle who taught me the ways of Willie Nelson and the ways of Jim Beam.
Yeah. You've told me about one uncle who's nuts.
That's probably
that's
my
the
uncle.
One that used to drop him off at the airport on holidays to rather than babysit.
That was my dad's uncle.
He used to do what?
Instead of babysitting?
My dad's uncle would drop him off at the airport with quarters. And this was back in the day before 9/11, the holiday.
The old Indy airport.
When you had, he would just drop them off, and they would run around the airport with quarters, and they would just play video games or buy bubble gum in Plainfield.
Not supervised.
Unsupervised. He said they got on the roof. They used to get on the roof and watch airplanes land through. God. This was back in the...
This is what he'd do rather than...
I was born in... This was 70-something, mm-hmm. back in the 70s.
And he only wore a...
Child abuse was legal.
Terry Labonte sweatshirt.
He would have been my dad's uncle as well. So, yeah, he was buried in a Tony Stewart pullover hoodie. It wasn't a hoodie with like a hood. It was just a pullover. But, no, he was the biggest NASCAR fan ever.
But then he wore sweatpants all the time, right?
Oh, that's all he wore, sweatpants and NASCAR t-shirt.
But the sweatpants with the banded ankle.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's white trash extraordinaire.
And tennis shoes.
Oh, yeah.
You're getting twice the elastic for your money.
No, he lived at home until he died. He never moved out.
He lived with
his mother and father.
Wow.
And when he would babysit, he'd drop him off at the airport.
Can you imagine?
Quarters.
He died before his parents. Shocking.
No.
Cirrhosis?
No. He didn't drink.
What?
No.
This is not adding.
He lived off Little Debbie's and like Diet Coke.
Instead of babysit, he'd drive him to the
airport.
No,
my great grandmother lived to be 90. She was 70 when I was born. So she lived to be 98.
Tad has a smoking hot mom.
What the hell does that have to do with my grandma?
Well, I'm guessing she got it from somewhere.
Well, we're talking about my dad's side.
Oh, okay.
Well, no, they all smoke themselves. My mom's side's all Italian. They all just... They were coal miners out in Terre Haute.
Terre Haute.
And then my... her aunt ran the nickel and dime store.
In Bucktown?
No, on Terre Haute. Linton.
All right, Greg, final
Anywho,
thoughts.
Anywho, enough about this.
Final thoughts, Greg.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Amen.
Happy Hanukkah.
Enjoy, and we'll talk to you, I'm sure, probably. We'll probably do it after the New Year.
We'll take next week off. We deserve a break.
Yeah, unless you get too locked up in here.
You need
some social activity.
Yeah, you gonna throw another holiday party? Have everybody over?
I have even less planned next week. And cramming my head from morning to night, full of information. It's gonna have to come out somewhere.
It is. So we'll see. We'll play it by ear. But if not, everybody have a happy Christmas or Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And then we will talk to you in 2017.
Yeah, they're getting 3.5 hours on this one, and then I'm putting the Rob Kendalls in, so they're getting a solid.
Should last.
Split it up. You got a lot. You got a lot out of us.
That's a lot of Tad Western.
We podcasted a lot this week.
We did.
I podcasted out.
We did the Jeff Vibbert podcast.
Like 8 hours of podcast.
I will put the Jeff Vibbert Christmas episode in our feed so you can hear that. And then we went and did Rob Kendall yesterday. Yep. And then we did this tonight.
Yep.
So
it's been a busy podcast week.
Too much us. Mm-hmm. As if there were such a thing. All right.
Everyone have a good Christmas. And even if you didn't like anything that I said.
You did great.
I'm still a good person.
He still gave you a discount code for TedWestern.edu.
And I gave you, listen, I'm the gift that keeps on giving. At least you don't have me as a family member.
Yep. All right. I want to thank everybody for making 2016 the best year of We Are Libertarians. This is, you know, we started in 2012 and most of 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015. A lot of bumps in the road, especially in the post-divorce years. And his head's hitting it. So 2016, my goal at the beginning of the year was to put as much as I could into We Are Libertarians and to really go all in. And this was the year where I joked earlier that it went from a hobby to a responsibility, and that is because you all started donating money to us, you all started writing us, you all started sharing our stuff, and our audience now has a vested interest in We Are Libertarians and making it succeed, and people are getting involved in, and conversing with us inside the, I don't know what he's doing over there, the Facebook group that you can find at WeLibertarians.com, and, you know, we have worked our tails off this year and tried to put out an episode a week. I'm pretty sure we hit 52, at least over 50, I would imagine. So we tried to hold up our end of the bargain this year and give you as much as we possibly could in the time that we have. You know, when this is a hobby of sorts.
You write a lot.
We're constantly writing, reading, and trying to process information for you. And all we ask in return is just that you help us grow, that you promote us, that you say, hey, listen, I have this group. It's a libertarian podcast, but that means that they're beholden to no one. And here it explains Russian hacking, and here it explains fake news, and here it explains geopolitics, and here it explains – shared – this with your friends. And a lot of you did that when we asked last time. And thank you so much for doing that. We appreciate it because you are really helping us succeed and helping us bring information at a time when people critically need it. There are a lot of big decisions that are going to be made over the next decade, especially, and we plan to be right in the middle of it. And that is only because of you. You know, we're past the point where you get to a point where you go, all right, are we going to do this or are we not going to do this? Are we going to continue this hobby or are we not? And this year we just decided to double down and continue to do it. And we didn't get to everything we wanted to do. If you remember the extra show we were going to do that we talked about 6 months ago, we're still going to do that, whether Greg wants to kill me or not. We're going to do
I don't want to kill you. I mean, it's just, yeah. It's,
yeah.
I mean, it's the hardest thing is, like, you know, we had it easy because of the election year. And so right. We have to work double as hard now on coming up with content ideas.
I have never felt more, there's too much to talk about. Like, to me, there's too much going on.
Yeah, like,
So, but it is easy to get burnt out. That's why we're going to take a little break next week. But I just want to thank everybody, all of you listeners, and everybody who donates, everybody who likes our Facebook page. If you interact with us in any way, shape, or form, man, we just appreciate it.
Yes, we do.
You have made this year spectacular for us. This is the most fun thing I do, and it is my passion. And I love sitting behind this mic and putting 10 to 20 hours a week into this for pretty much free. You guys help offset the cost at this point, but we're certainly not making any money. So we appreciate you doing all that for us, and I could go on thanking you forever, but I won't because you probably want to listen to, you know, Mark Maron or something. So God bless. Hope you have a great Christmas. Hope you have a great Hanukkah. Hope you have a great Kwanzaa. I'm sure we have Kwanzaa listeners. We hope you have a Harry, yes. So we thank you so much for joining us here on this episode of We Are Libertarians. And as always, we promise
to do better next time.
Next time.
Next year.
Hi, it's Dear Leader. It's Chris Spangle. And you know what time it is. It's that time where I ask you for money. And I'm not asking you for money to make myself rich. I'm asking you because I love We Are Libertarians. And obviously, if you're listening to We Are Libertarians, I know that you're loving it too. And so you want more people to know about it. So that means we need money to advertise. And every time you go to WeAreLibertarians.com and you choose a monthly donation, or you make a one-time contribution, or you sign up and pay per episode through Patreon, you're helping more people find out about We Are Libertarians. You're helping us upgrade equipment. You're helping us offset costs. And you know what? We really appreciate when you do that. So, if you find value in We Are Libertarians, The Chris Spangle Show, Creating Maya, and all the other shows that we do, then we need your help. Please, make a monthly commitment, $5 a month. That's $1 per episode. And gosh darn it, I think we're worth it. Do you? Visit WeAreLibertarians.com and make a donation today. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Get our other shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.